broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
Are we not? I'm sorry, are we not playing Independence Day?
No, it's all slow. It's still downloading.
Oh, that's too bad. We're not going to play Aaron's special little, I could have been at a barbecue. Did remix. And I'll try to get past it.
Oh, don't worry. I'll get to it.
I'm crying on the inside, sir. Hello. It's 1 minute and 48 seconds after the hour of 11, and it's the month of June in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. Why, hello, my chums, and greetings to you all. It is Monday, and welcome to day 12. I'm making a couple notes to myself here because there's things we have to get done today. Hold on just 1 second. Okay. All right. Normally, there's things I can just let go by the wayside. But there's things that have to be accomplished today. This body world thing, for one. We got to talk about this. All right. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to engage with us telephonically today with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your what have you. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Scotty is standing by to feign a screening of your calls, which he will then pass along like a fireman's bucket carry with no thought given to them whatsoever. 503-733-2970, or you can also email us. It is rick@rickemerson.com. Thank you so much for coming along. Here's what we got coming up today. This is just a smattering of things. Do you have something infesting one of your eyelids?
No, my eyes are just so itchy from allergies.
All right. Is that thing when you watch somebody scratch? See, now Tim's scratching his eyes. That's what I'm saying. Now I'm doing it, too.
There's something in the air.
And now it feels like there's something in my eye. Thanks so much.
No problem.
Now it's that thing where you see somebody scratching some part of their anatomy, and then suddenly that, it doesn't even matter what it is. And all of a sudden, that part of it, I can't even look at you now. Oh, damn it, now I have to scratch my eyes. This is like that day that Lycus came on the air and just yawned for a while at the beginning of his show. He just sort of turned off the music. Wait, can you just drop the bed here? Just sort of a... Right there. There you go. Thanks so much. Right at the beginning of the show, fantastic.
That's really
now
good.
Now I'm yawning and my... Best start to a show ever. Now I'm yawning and my eyes are watering. Fantastic. I'm sure I look wonderful. All right. But in any event... What?
In less than an hour,
I hate
aircraft from here will join others from around the world.
I'm just a little anxious to get up there and whoop E.T.'s ass, that's all.
You will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind.
Kick the tires and light the fire.
I hate that.
Oh,
the worst
too.
Line in the whole thing. I don't even remember him being in the movie.
Yeah, he's a big part of it.
A new meaning for all of us today.
I could have been at a barbecue!
It can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore.
And what the hell is that smell?
We will be united in our common interests.
We've got to listen to the whole thing. Aaron works hard on it.
Episode of South Park where somebody starts singing Come Sail Away by Styx and Cartman has to sing the entire thing. Because you can't just sing part of Come Sail Away. Let's never play that again. That ought to be part of it. I really do agree with him on one point, though. This really ought to be part of not only just a gizmo, but when you become a United States citizen, I'm looking at you, Mark from Britain, you ought to have to recite that speech all the way through in its entirety. Someday when I'm president of the United States, that's what I'm going to do. just so we don't have to suffer alone. I'm going to make every... Because there's that thing where you have to stand up when you become a citizen, and you raise your hand and you say, whatever, you renounce all allegiance to any prince or potentate or whatever the hell that thing is. And then you have to recite Bill Pullman's speech from Independence Day. Knowledge of Bill Pullman is knowledge that all prospective Americans must have. And you have to be able to tell the difference between Jeff Bridges, Jeff Daniels, Bill Pullman, Bill Paxton, and William Hurt. You have to be able to tell them all apart and to list a movie that each has done. Hey, speaking of William Hurt, I'm going to stop myself right there. I'm not going to talk about William Hurt quite yet. I have a William Hurt Portland observation here in a second. First of all, here's what's coming up today. CNN Radio correspondent Lisa Goddard will join us from The Hill. We will talk about last night's incredibly tedious and uninteresting Democratic debate. I didn't even watch it live. I mean, I watched segments of it, and then I watched some of it on YouTube today, and it was just so, it was so colossally uninteresting. And Tim totally nailed it. When there's some of those guys just look like they're made out of beige khaki. I mean, just a whole lot of, like, perpetual. What are you talking about? Chris Dodd?
Yeah.
Just Chris Dodd, Joe Biden, just perpetual candidates. Just sort of, that's what they do. Every 4 years, they mortgage their house again. They go pull equity out of their home, and then they run for president for 6 months until they fail miserably, and then they come back in another 4 years. Anyway, doesn't matter. Hillary Clinton's going to be the nominee. Doesn't matter. I don't care what you do. I don't care what anybody does. It's going to be Hillary. It's going to be Hillary in at least a vice presidential role and probably in a presidential role. And I'm not just saying that because I want Hillary to run because I want to see the discord it'll cause America. I'm just saying it because it's true. There's nothing you or anybody else can do about it. I don't know if it's going to be Giuliani. It might, in fact, be Fred Thompson. But on the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton will be the nominee for the Democratic Party. Her numbers are too high to ignore. Nobody's going to get around it. Nothing you do is going to stop that.
You can't hurt her.
Nope.
She cannot be hurt, brought to tears,
no.
Brought down nothing.
She is very much like one of the ships in Independence Day.
And all of you Republicans from the Clinton administration who did everything they could to bring him down, you are the reason that she is here, and you are the reason she's going to win.
It's absolutely true. They really have, and I simply say this is a political observation. All part of
the right wing of America from the 1990s for making this possible. Made her a better woman.
All partisanship aside, you really are true. You really are right about this. The Republicans did sow the seeds of their own destruction by going after Bill Clinton. Boy, God, how much do you wish the Republicans could just take that whole Monica Lewinsky thing back? How much do you wish they could just... Did you see that thing about Larry Flint? Larry Flint is offering, again, $1 million for anybody that can prove that they're effing a congressperson. Fantastic. I love that guy. With everything in me, I love him. He's a proud American. He's what makes this country great. Anywho, so we're going to talk to Lisa Goddard about the Democratic debate last night. Let's see. Boy, John Edwards is a pretty boy. Boy, I mean, I can't... It's impossible to just express how perfectly coiffed and somewhat creepy and unsettling that guy is. We'll talk to Lisa Goddard about that. Dick Iuliano, actually, speaking of Larry Flint, Dick Iuliano will join us to talk about Larry Flint. Larry Flint has offered $1 million. I don't think it's just a Republican. I think it's anybody. He's offering $1 million to anybody that can prove that they are getting on with a congressperson, which is fantastic. What else? CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer will join us from Los Angeles. I don't know where Roop is today. It's like they listed Roop, and then now he's not there. So maybe he's on assignment, or he's doing something or other.
Yeah, he's out. Yeah, he's out on assignment.
You always, when they say that he's out on assignment, you always assume that that's a cover for something, that they're lying in some way. Like he's spending more time with his family. In any event, because Paris Hilton went to jail on Sunday, which she did so to try to minimize the media spin cycle, which was somewhat effective because I didn't even really know until late last night that she'd done it. It was like 11 o'clock, 11:30, something last night that I realized she'd actually gone to jail because I think everybody thought it was going to be tomorrow. I think it was supposed to be the 5th. And so she went 2 days early at the end of a weekend so that it would, so that the news cycle would miss her, which it largely did. But we'll talk to Amanda Moyer about Paris Hilton in jail. Peter Carlin, I believe, will be joining us from the Oregonian at 2 o'clock to talk about last night's Sopranos, which was fan-freaking-tastic, by the way, which was just... And I'm going to tell you right now, make no apologies. If you don't want to know what happened on last night's Sopranos, this is the time for you to stop listening. Probably now and then probably again at 2 o'clock. God damn, was last night's Sopranos great. We'll talk about that in a second. Great entourage as well last night. What else is coming up today? We'll get to this. We have that guy who I think we were identifying as Joe, not his real name, who sent us a song created by the good folks at TriMet, and I'm pretty sure that the song actually was never even used. It's a song to try to appeal to today's urban youth, to get today's young people to ride the Max or the bus. I'm not sure whether it's about just the Max or whether it's the bus line as well that the song addresses.
They do ride it, they just don't pay for it.
To address today's exciting young turnstile hoppers, there's too busy shooting at it as it passes through town, apparently, if last week's news is to be believed. In any event, so TriMet created what I believe is the single worst song to promote anything ever in the history of the world. And so I want to thank somebody from inside the organization for sending that to me. I have it sitting here now. We'll play it a little later on. What else do we have? Tim Riley is going to be, two things. A, will not be accompanying us to Body World 3 this Wednesday morning, where we're going on a special press tour. It's Sarah Dillon and Scotty J and myself. We are all going to see Body World 3. There's an exciting press tour followed by a continental breakfast. Tim will not be there, and so we are giving one lucky listener a chance to accompany us on Wednesday morning as the sort of Tim Riley stand-in for that morning. And if you don't completely suck, you may or may not come back in on Friday and do some stories during the new news hour, because Tim is not going to be with us this coming Friday. He's going to be gone on Friday. So we will audition some prospective Tim Rileys for a day and a half later on in today's program. We'll get to that as well. Well, that's it. Oh, and I got this thing about the teen talent show that's Scotty and I are apparently going to be judging. There's no time to get to that now. It's 503-733-2970. We are joined today, as always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon. Why, hello.
Hello.
And how are you today?
Good. I need my coffee, but I'm feeling fine.
Ride your bike today?
I did not.
Good for you.
Did you ride your bike today?
No, I didn't. I told
at
you
least
on Friday.
I'm not screwing retarded people.
I told
money.
You. Now, listen. I told you on Friday, I let everybody know that I would not be riding my bike today.
Well, I've got to do a bunch of crap today, so that's my excuse. I've got to go to the DMV and then return some stuff and run all around.
You don't have to do the emissions thing, do you?
No, I already did that.
All right.
I just done on Friday. Now I have to get, change the title over something. I don't really know what I'm doing.
A day at the DMV is a day worth living. That's a day. You can't get more fun than that. You can't get more exciting. And I know I've made this observation before, but I never get tired of trotting it out. I don't understand why, no matter when or what day or what time of the year I go into the DMV, everyone in there is ugly and stupid and missing half their teeth. I don't know if there's a special DMV for good-looking people somewhere, if there's like a special DMV in Tim's neighborhood that just caters to people who have all of their, their dental work is all intact. Every time I go into the DMV, goddamn, it's just a bunch of people who smell of like, they just smell of whiskey and stool, and it's just like a bunch of kids running around everywhere, and you look over and a guy's like three knuckles deep into his own nose. It's just the worst. It's like just the bottom scrapings off the shoe sole of humanity. It's the worst place on earth. So, the great thing about Oregon, I don't even know how long it is, but it's a multi-year thing when you renew your car tabs, isn't it? When you renew your car tabs, isn't it like two years? As opposed to Washington, where you, at least when I was growing up, you had to renew your tabs once a year. There is nothing that makes me happier than elongated times between visits to the DMV, because that's the worst place on earth. So, excellent. Fantastic. Well, I did not bicycle today. I will be bicycling tomorrow, and undoubtedly
make
throughout
up for
the
today.
Week. No, it doesn't, but there's nothing I could... I had to...
Oh, you have your shrink, or did you already have your shrink today?
Well, I don't want to talk about it.
You already talked about it on the air, so you have to talk about it.
I'll talk about it after.
That's the commitment that you make when you open your mouth and talk about things in your personal life.
I'm going to write down the day and time you said that and have you sign it, by the way.
I know. You know that I know it.
All right.
I've had many a craft time in my life that's been illuminated by this show.
Yes. Yes, you have. Working on the following stories for your edification today, ladies and gentlemen, is newsman Tim Riley.
There's an Oregon connection to the terrorist plot that blow up JFK Airport. A boy becomes stuck in a truck near chimney. A rabid Oregon bat may make history. And, of course, Paris Hilton.
Fantastic.
Just behind bars.
Oh, and by the way, I've got this. This is a MySpace message from somebody. I won't reveal who this is. Well, I guess it won't... I guess it'll become clear who it is because... Well, for reasons that will become obvious. Anyway, this email says, Rick, myself and a few comrades were on... Comrades, I'm sorry. Myself and a few comrades were on the Miles Around show this weekend with Dennis Pitzenbarger. We were in the AM 970 studios. During the interview, this person says, I was a first-hand witness extra chocolate crumbs falling right into Tim Riley's keyboard.
Ew.
As well as sticky Diet Red Bull stains all over the table. On a lighter note, we did kill a 12-pack of Budweiser on air in record time. Fantastic. I'm sure CBS is proud of all of you.
Isn't food prohibited from the studio?
You know, you'd think so, wouldn't you? Mm. You'd think that's the case. I'll get Jeff McGinley on that right now.
Oh.
All right, it's 503-733-2970. So if you,
Oh, there's one right there. Look at that. Sons of bitches.
Oh, right there. Yeah, I'm looking over there, and there's just those the small little concentric, you know, the overlapping circles from the bottom of the Red Bull can. Wait, Red Bull. It really is like they just took a bunch of, like, sewage runoff and just mixed it with caffeine.
Gave them Saturday it. Show.
That wasn't what I was going to say at all. That really...
Oh, we're up to the
check. Damn. Jesus. Okay. Never mind. Gonna move on from that. I'll talk about my bike and the shrink and the hey and the whatnot here in just a second. Jesus Christ! It's 503-733-2970. Hello. How are you, sir?
Great. Hey, I live in Washington. I go to the DMV once every 5 years to renew my license.
Yeah.
They send me a deal in the mail. I ship it back. They send my tags through the mail. I never have to see them.
Now. That's weird. So you renew your you don't renew your license in the mail, but just your tags.
Just the tags. And the reason why the people that you see at the DMV are all toothless and stupid is because of where you live.
Thank you.
The people who live around you are all toothless and stupid, so and seeing them at the DMV, they're still toothless and stupid.
Thanks so much.
There you go.
I like to start the day with a positive equation about my community.
There you go.
Speaking of which, by the way, I do have, this is apropos of nothing, I have this. This is from, once again, this is a press release. I'm pretty sure that this went to, Tim relayed this to me. This is a press release that he got. Would we like to enter some, this is an interview opportunity somebody has sent us. Dentists from around your world gather in Las Vegas next month to discuss the latest methods to fix your listeners' damaged teeth. Do they know our audience or what? And the subject line is, why 20 million Americans have lost their teeth. More than 20 million people in the U.S. are missing all of their natural teeth. That can't be true. 20 million people, really? And more than 100 million. I wonder if that counts really old people, though. Like the people who have the dentures and so forth. More than 100 million people. This is made up. This is absolute crap. There's no way this is real. Listen to this. More than 20 million people in the U.S. are missing all of their teeth, and more than 100 million people... What do you suppose the rest of this sentence says, sir? More than 100 million people are missing between blank and blank of their teeth. It's their numbers. More than 100 million people, which is almost half the population, are missing between blank and blank of their teeth.
10 to 15.
Yeah, but okay, 11 to 15. But that can't be true. Half the people in the country are not missing 15 teeth. That's like missing an entire row.
You don't know what's going on in people's mouths. Maybe they have, prosthetic teeth. Is that what they're called?
How would you lose half your teeth? You're giving me that look that your facial expression is the duh expression, but I honestly don't know. There's something really, really wrong with your brain if you're missing half your teeth. That doesn't make any sense at all. They can't be counting, they can't be counting children. That would be cheating. They have to be talking about adults, which means this is a made-up statistic. There is no way that half of the United States population of adults is missing 15 of their teeth. That's like missing your entire upper plate. That just doesn't make any sense. That's just insane. That's a made-up statistic. I'm not going to read it ever again. All right, we're done with that. All right, so what else do we have? Well, we gotta hustle our bustle, as they say, because we got Lisa Goddard coming up at the bottom of the hour. Real quickly, let me just say this. No, I did not bicycle today. I had, and the reason I was going to, take my car is because I had two different things. I had one at the beginning of the day, one at the end of the day. I had a client meeting at 9 o'clock in Tigard, which I just, and even with the car, I just barely got here in time. I got here like 10:30. So I had a client meeting at Tigard at 9 o'clock this morning. And then this afternoon, as you know, it's a good thing, by the way, that we don't have national health care, because with national health care, you don't get your choice of doctors, and of course, they schedule you at a time of their convenience at some place a long way away, 9 weeks in advance, huh? Not at all like my insurance company, whom I called, I don't know, like 7-8 weeks ago, and I'm like, hey, I'm going crazy. I need a shrink. And they scheduled me with a shrink. This is like 7 weeks ago, because I came here and I talked about it when I made the appointment. I scheduled my shrink appointment 7 weeks ago. My appointment was scheduled for today in Clackamas at 4 o'clock with some person I've never met, some doctor I don't know anything about. Guess who called me this morning at 6:45 and left me an automated message canceling my appointment? Yes. Yes, it was my insurance company. It wasn't even a person. It was a robotic voice that called me this morning. And, of course, I still had the appointment in Tigard, so I still couldn't, bicycle. I still had to bring a car. So, which means not only did I drive the car today, but I don't have my shrink appointment. It means I'm going to continue to be crazy for an even longer period of time. It means I'm going to have to drive whenever they do reschedule my shrink appointment. And also, let me say this. Just by, if I am speaking now directly to my goddamn insurance provider, here's the thing. If anybody's ever been in therapy, you know this to be true. If you are going to see a therapist or any mental health professional, you are required to give 24 hours notice of cancellation or they still bill you. If you go to see a shrink and you cancel, and this is an industry-wide standard, if you have a shrink appointment and you cancel with more than a day's notice, less than a day's notice, they bill you regardless. My insurance company canceled this morning at 6:45 a.m. for an appointment that is today at 4 p.m., which means that they owe me like $98.
Have you ever seen this episode of Seinfeld?
Sons of bitches, no.
Yeah, where someone cancels an appointment on George and he tries to get them to pay.
Well, seriously, if I canceled, they would charge me if I canceled with less than a day's notice. And by the way, I'd also like to thank them for having an automated voice call me this morning, which means that the first time I tried to call and get a shrink, the thing is making me dangerously exercised. But the first time I called to make the appointment with the shrink, how long do you think I was on hold with my insurance company? Yes, that'd be over an hour. I was on hold for 75 minutes to make the appointment. They've now canceled the appointment, which means, and because they had an automated phone dialer do it, because they actually didn't have an operator cancel the appointment like a real live human being, it means that now it is incumbent upon me to call back and reschedule with them. You sons of bitches.
So there you go. Aren't there any alternatives to the Clackamas Cuckoo House? Or is that the only place you can go?
Apparently not. No. No, there aren't. Because when I called and made this appointment 7 weeks ago, she said, this is exactly what she said to me, by the way, when I made the appointment. She goes, how do you feel about Clackamas? And there's just so many ways to answer that question. And I kind of said, well, is there something closer in? And she says, sure, in August. And I said,
here's the big old Chevy dealership. Still didn't give it a paint job.
If you book 3 appointments now, you get a side of beef.
Jesus.
Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Well, good morning, Rick.
Hi.
A few moments ago, you were speaking about how do people's teeth get as bad as they are.
There's no way that half of Americans are missing 15 of their teeth.
Well, I don't know about that. I know my 23-year-old son, he needs all of his teeth are now dead. And they're black.
Okay, now...
So he needs to remove all of them and
let's
start over.
Let's stop here. A... Sounds like he's not the only one that needs to start over. What's wrong with your kids? Why now? I'm going to feel like an ass if he has some disease or something. What is wrong with his teeth?
He would never, ever brush them, and he drinks soda instead of any other fluid on the planet. And sugar cereal are like a 24/7 staple.
Okay, can I just tell you this? First of all,
so
the notion
rotting out of his head.
The notion of your teeth being dead, when people refer to you having a dead tooth, that is a singularly unnerving thing to me. I don't know why. But sometimes when somebody like my brother got hit with a hammer one time, he was working on a job, somebody swung a hammer, got hit in there, and one of his teeth went black, it went dead. And the notion of a dead tooth in your mouth is just the weirdest, creepiest thing to me. So you're telling me your kid has 32 dead teeth and you're blaming it on soda?
Well, I don't know what else to say.
Well, I do.
I mean,
it's one syllable.
I know that.
Let me ask you this. In all honesty, yes. I'm not trying to imply anything untoward about your family, but have you asked him if there's perhaps something a little bit more intense than sugar that he's been putting into his body?
Well, he did for a while roll his own.
Roll his own what, sir?
Dried leaves.
Yeah, that doesn't. I'm thinking of the opposite end of the drug spectrum.
Well, no, he claims that he never did anything other than the marijuana.
But see, but here's the thing, is like if he was just drinking a lot of soda and not brushing his teeth, he'd be full of cavities. But that doesn't kill your teeth. That just puts them, puts holes in them.
But if you don't go to the dentist and they don't fill them, then the cavity gets worse and it just kills the tooth.
Well, I suppose. You know,
when you would take him to the dentist, he would fight, yell, holler, scream. In fact, he took his own braces out of his head because he was tired of them.
Okay. Have you considered the possibility that your son is a nut, sir?
Well, I already have by far.
If you look, if all of you, if you're letting all of your, all 32 of your teeth go dead, yes, and you're taking out your own braces,
yes,
I think you need to sit in a room and have a long talk with someone. That I don't mean to insult your son, sir, but it does sound like he's, that does sound a little out of the ordinary.
Just a couple degrees.
All right. How much is that going to cost him to get all 32 of his teeth fixed?
Well, we're hoping he joins the Navy, so it'll cost all of us less.
Yes, so I can pay for it instead. That's all. Awesome. Thank you. Thanks so much.
We appreciate your donation.
Thank you, sir.
Good day.
All right. There you go. Do we have to break?
Well, Lisa's already calling. We could just skip. We could push it back.
Okay.
Want to do that?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I can tell that tone of voice, by the way.
Yeah.
That's the tone of voice my mother used to get when I would forestall cleaning my room for so long that she would just throw up her hands and go, fine, I'll do it. All right. Well, since she's a minute or two early, let me get one more here, and then we'll talk to Lisa. Let's see. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello there.
Hi. So just like Tony Soprano, no more shrink, huh?
Well, it's not no more shrink. My shrink canceled on me. I didn't. Thank you.
What Tony's shrink?
Good rep. Well, for different reasons, I think. Good reference. Did you? So you watched last night Sopranos?
Yeah.
How great? How just kind of cold and just, I don't know, just sort of, I don't want to say sad, but just how weird and melancholy was that moment between Tony and Melfi where she kicked him out of therapy forever?
How big a boot up your butt do you need?
Seriously. I mean, last night's episode, just when you thought the punches kept, were done, that show last night was like one low gut punch after another, and then a guy kicking you down a set of stairs and kicking you in the junk.
Yeah, I don't know which is worse, watching that or The Shield. Talk about a depression run. My God.
I would say that The Shield is more relentlessly bleak, although The Sopranos lulls you in with moments of domestic tranquility and then sets fire to your head.
Yeah. And, of course, Rick, I got to remind you, if you don't believe 50% of the people don't have half of their teeth, go back to DMV and look.
I suppose that's fair. I guess I can't come up a long DMV rant and then talk about how everybody has all their teeth in this country.
Yeah, it's really true.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Rick.
All right, there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show from the Hill, CNN radio correspondent to the stars, the one and only lovely Lisa Goddard. Why, hello.
Well, hello to you.
How are you on this fine Monday?
But I'm going crazy. I didn't see the Sopranos last night because I was covering the presidential debate, and so I held the phone away from my ear during this, and I just kept hearing. And then,
all right, well,
I think I didn't get any tip off.
I won't give anything away then during the course of this call. I will reveal nothing.
Right.
Hey,
let me
ask you this: do you believe the statistic that 100 million Americans are missing between 11 and 15 teeth?
100 million. Well, how many Americans are of a golden age?
Yeah, but I mean, just because you get old, your teeth don't have to fall out. I mean, if you brush your teeth a couple times a day.
Does this count children under the age of one?
I can't imagine that it does, because it seems like that would be a patently false and deceptive use of statistics. I mean, this is from a purportedly reputable organization, so it seems like...
One in five? Is that what that is almost?
Well, I mean, if there's 280 million people in the country, I mean, I guess it's maybe about 40%, something like that.
Is that all? I thought we were closer to 400 million.
Well, 100 million people, still a damn lot of people to say that they're missing up to 15. That's like missing your entire bottom row of teeth. That just doesn't make any sense. So, well, in any case.
Who's coming out with that? Whose statistic is that?
I swear to God, there was somebody trying to book a guest on our show, and the subject line is... 20 million Americans have lost their teeth, and then they lead in. This is what they think of our audience, by the way. You can tell what they think of your audience by the opening lead. It says here, dentists from around the world will be gathering in Las Vegas next month to discuss the latest methods to fix your listeners' damaged teeth. So, apparently, our audience base is just one giant aggregated group of impacted enamel, apparently. So, and then they say... More than 100 million Americans are missing between 11 to 15 of their teeth.
Also, not counting dead people, I'm hoping.
Probably not. So,
all right. Okay. Do you have all your teeth, Lisa Goddard?
I do have all my teeth.
Sarah, all your teeth?
I have all my teeth.
I have all my teeth. There you go. See, and I know Tim has all his teeth. That guy has a blindingly, dazzlingly white smile. He's got that, what is that, Sonicare toothbrush. So, you know, we're all, so the thing is, we are blowing the curve for everybody right here. All right, let's talk about last night's debate, which I found tedious and uninteresting in almost every way.
I had a feeling you'd feel that way.
Well, it's not like everybody has to jump over a podium and start throwing punches or whatever, but here's the feeling I'm getting. And tell me, first of all, we'll talk in broad strokes here, and you tell me if my take on the conventional wisdom is sort of right. First of all, I feel like barring, what is that, the second law of Newtonian motion or something, where an object stays upon its given path unless acted upon by an outside force.
At rest, right?
Yes, I feel like unless something really stunning happens, it seems like a fait accompli that it's going to be Hillary or some combination of Hillary with somebody else. Her numbers just seem so high. She doesn't make mistakes, typically. She has a very effective war machine set up behind her. She's got, the Bill Clinton halo around her. He's sort of the honorary co-president if she gets elected. I think most people sort of assume that. She's got a very energized female base, I would imagine. All of these things seem to add to the fact that whether or not the Democratic Party wants her to be the nominee, the numbers will be too high for them to pick anybody else.
Last night, I came into that debate thinking that Hillary is not as strong as people think she is, and I left the debate thinking that she may be as strong as people think she is. But the truth of it is, it's up only right now, and this campaign, anything could change this campaign at this point. These guys have basically until December, maybe New Year's, to get themselves in the right position for the primary. And I really think anything could happen. I think Hillary could be thinking right now. Yeah.
I
apparently have also bored you.
No. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. That I apologize. A little pulling back the curtain just a little bit here. The last half of your sentence, I actually was muting my mic and I was telling Sarah something about one of our commercial breaks. So I apologize. But I can multitask. You were saying that blah blah blah. Hillary peaking right now. I guess my thing, though, would be this, that it's not that Hillary's peaking right now. And again, I don't really know, but just my assessment as a layperson is not that Hillary's peaking now, but that Hillary, in a very real sense, peaked a long time ago. And as I've said a few times, I think that everybody, the polarization on her is done. It's finished. The centrifuge has been spun. And people are where they're going to be on her. And it is incumbent upon her to either screw up really massively or for somebody else to do something really impressive. And everybody seems to be playing it so safe.
Right.
That if
both those things could happen. These guys are so competitive. Both of those things could happen. This is an intense campaign. Last night it looked so polite and kind of boring to you, but behind the scenes, it was unbelievable being there and seeing how intense all of these campaign operatives are. You really would think that the fate of the world, and I guess in some ways the fate of the world is at stake, but they're not thinking of it that way. They're thinking of it in terms of the political world and how important this is. But, I mean, the tension is incredibly high, and I think either of those scenarios could happen. So she could make a mistake, or someone else could step up and hit one out of the park. I don't know if she's peaking now or not, but it's tricky to have such high numbers at this point. It's going to be tricky to keep that.
What is the rationality supposed to be behind Hillary's refusal just to... She will never actually come out and say that she regrets the authorization of force use. And is that just part of the... I don't mean for this to sound as petty as it sounds. Is that because she doesn't want to be on record admitting that she was wrong about something?
There's two camps on that one. Some people say that's exactly what she's doing, that she doesn't want to admit a mistake and give ammunition to Republicans when she gets into the general election.
Mm-hmm.
Others say that it's her legitimately her point of view, that she really does think she made the right decision based on the information she had, and that she's the type of person that's not going to say she made a mistake when she doesn't feel like she could have gone another way. Now, I think it's somewhere in the middle. I think clearly this is a political move in some way, but maybe she does look at it as, hey, I'm not going to say I made a mistake when I don't feel like I could have made any other choice at the time.
And then there seemed to be at least a little bit more of sort of hitting back and forth between each other as opposed to the last time when they were all sort of an allied force against the Bush administration, especially between Obama and Edwards. And
you know, that's what Wolf Blitzer was hoping for in the pre-debate. I was in on watching some of those meetings where they were figuring out the questions. I was standing right there next to Wolf Blitzer there talking about it, and they really were hoping for that kind of interaction. You know, I don't know what it looked like on television, but could you tell? I think one of the strangest things about that debate was that all these candidates were lined up, and so many of them throughout the debate had their hands raised. It was really almost like a miniature classroom trying to get Wolf Blitzer's attention and sort of getting frustrated at each other, who was getting called on. And that's what they wanted. They wanted that kind of interaction. They wanted people to sort of be jumping on the pile of any issue.
And there was that one, I'm sorry to interrupt, but there was that one great Wolf Blitzer moment, though, when he, I don't want to say goaded, but he very much pushed Edwards to, as he put it last night, name names.
Yeah.
And you know, because Edwards was giving this sort of tacit, this sort of implicit condemnation of Hillary and Obama and their votes for the war, and but he wouldn't say Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama. And Wolf Blitzer finally said, well, will you name names? And he said, well, I don't want to. Well, tell us who you're talking about. And he, you know, and Edwards finally came out and did it, which wouldn't have happened if Blitzer hadn't pushed him on it.
Right, that's exactly right. Right. I don't know. I think in the end, this debate, in, you know, it's a debate, presidential debate in June. So who knows what kind of impact. It could have some impact here in New Hampshire, though. Those members of the audience were not impressed, by and large. I think most of them left with a very similar opinion they walked in with. So Joe Biden got a lot of attention last night. His sort of, I'm going to talk louder than everybody else.
You know, I got to tell you, and this is real quickly because we're almost out of time. But I, you know, Joe Biden, it's like Chris Dodd, Tim Riley and I were talking about this today, my newsman. We were discussing that guys like Chris Dodd and Joe Biden, they just sort of seem to be perpetual candidates. I remember being a kid, being, I don't know, probably 10 years old, and watching Mark Russell on PBS making Joe Biden jokes. I mean,
he was elected to the U.S. Senate when he was 29 years old.
Yeah.
But he's been there a long time. But, yeah, I think, and I got to send just some color background info. Each of these candidates had their own waiting room. And, you know, so Barack Obama had, I think, like the away team locker room, and Clinton had the home team. Mm-hmm. And honest to goodness, Dennis Kucinich had a tiny, tiny space that it seemed like it may have been a closet. It was really... We went and looked at it, and it was really sad.
Fantastic. It's sort of like my first office when I came to CBS, which I swear to God was a janitor's closet. There you go. So he had the Emerson.
Right, and then I got to get this across one more thing. Congressman William Jefferson of Louisiana, now indicted, 16 counts. He's the one that had the $90,000 in cash.
In his refrigerator, yeah.
According to the FBI.
Fantastic.
And so now he's been indicted.
Excellent. It's a good day to be us. All right. Well, is The Sopranos sitting on your TiVo, your DVR?
Yeah, when I get home Wednesday, maybe 4 o'clock in the afternoon, that's what I'm doing.
All right, I will try my best not to reveal anything over the next 48 hours.
Okay.
All right, Lisa, enjoy the rest of your day. Thank you so much.
All right.
All right, CNN radio correspondent Lisa Goddard. Fantastic. She's there in Manchester, New Hampshire. We're going to New Hampshire. We're going to break here. We've got the white man, Justin Whiteman. On hold about the tooth things. Apparently he does teeth for a living. So we'll get the white man's perspective on teeth around the corner. We got somebody else calling about teeth as well. More importantly, Dick Uliano. Not more importantly, but more immediately. We have Dick Uliano who's going to be... Well, it is more important because it's about Hustler magazine. So we'll talk about Larry Flint around the corner. So tooth calls, Hustler, Dick Uliano, Tim Riley at the top. All that coming up. It's a Rick Emerson radio program. We return momentarily. Don't go anywhere. You'll kill yourself out of guilt. Emerson radio program. It's a glorious Monday. Good morning. It's 503-733-2970. Thanks so much for coming by. Coming to later on, CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer from she's in Atlanta, right? Yeah, Atlanta, about Paris Hilton. Tim Riley coming up at the top of the hour at the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Later on, we will give you your chance to audition to be Tim Riley for a day and a half. The big upshot of that is you win passes to see Body World, or a pass anyway, to see Body Worlds 3 at OMSI, along with Sarah, Scotty, and myself, Wednesday morning. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's welcome to the Rick Emerson Show our good friend Dick Uliano. Hi, Dick. How you doing today?
Hey, Rick. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming on such short notice. I know you've had a long day already. I wanted to ask you this because we were just talking to Lisa Goddard. We were talking about Hillary Clinton's approval ratings and how they sort of stayed solid, and a lot of that is tied to her husband and so forth. And it is, just by way of a backstory, my newsman and I were also talking about how, in a lot of ways, I think that the GOP has sowed the seeds of their own, if not their own destruction, certainly their own, what's going to be a very tricky campaign season for them. And a lot of that goes back to the Monica Lewinsky scandal, during which Larry Flynt offered, very famously, $1 million to anybody who can provide proof of an illicit sexual encounter with, I think at the time, didn't originally Flynt in 98 offer, it was money just for a Republican congressperson, and
that's
now
right.
It's,
and, I think that's right.
And now it's anybody, right? So what is, what,
that's
why
exactly
is...
Exactly right. He's doing it again. And the first time, Rick, it basically cost the job, I don't know if you remember this part...
Bob Livingston,
right, from Louisiana, who had acceded to the speakership of the House because Newt Gingrich had been forced out, and it turned out that he was having an affair with an aide, with a female aide. And so Livingston took over, and then Flint's $1 million offer at that time seemed to out Livingston. And now he's doing it again, full-page ad in yesterday's Washington Post. The Hustler magazine publisher is offering $1 million to anyone who can provide proof of an illicit sexual encounter with a high office, a high elected government official. He's saying congressperson, senator, or other prominent office holder.
And so is there any, has he given any hint as to what his motivation is this time? Because it was obviously motivated by Monica Lewinsky in that scandal last time. What, does he say why he's doing it?
No, not in the ad. Certainly you could argue that the ultimate motivation is money. I
sure.
mean, it's to sell magazines. It's an interesting ploy, I think. To out people of, that may have had illicit sex. You know, sometimes in Washington, working here as a reporter, you get drift of these kinds of rumors. I mean, I have heard rumors about different people. In some cases, I can remember somebody who's rumored to be a presidential candidate who was at the congressional level at the time, and the person wasn't married, but they said he was dating so-and-so's press secretary.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you hear that stuff. Apparently, with the rise of celebrityhood, there's a real interest in this in Washington.
There's no indications from the Larry Flynt camp as to if he has a particular target in mind, or if there's somebody specifically to sort of the focus of his dragnet.
Frankly, if he does, I'm not aware of it.
All right. And this, you say, is in the Washington Post yesterday? Is that when this came out?
That's exactly right. A full-page ad in the Washington Post. It was a simple ad, seeking any information on that.
All right. Well, thanks for filling us in, my friend. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, Dick Giuliano. Thank you, sir. Enjoy the rest of your day. Dick Giuliano, CNN radio correspondent in D.C. there. Fantastic. I dig that guy. All right. Excellent. If you know the great,
and you know that he knows exactly what he has, all of those little secrets that he can't tell us.
But that's the thing is, and you know, and Dick Giuliano was one of those guys. It, like, I would never lean on him for that because you can tell he's just like he's such like staunch. Not that the others don't, but I mean, you know, you can tell that Dick is very much from the old school. I guess maybe in a very specific kind of way, in a supercalifragilistic kind of way. Let's get real quickly here. Our good friend Justin Whiteman. Hello, sir.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
How are things, my friend?
Not bad in the dental world.
Yeah, we had this statistic, which I'm not going to drag through the whole show, but I did mention it at the top because we just got somebody said that more than 100 million people in the U.S. are missing between 11 and 15 of your teeth. Now, it says, what do you mean you do teeth for a living? What's your job?
Well, I'm a dental lab technician, and basically what we do, we're the guys that make the dentist look good. Because they merely just put them in, we make them. We make the teeth. We make what looks like an actual tooth out of porcelain, or we do the gold teeth or the bridges.
Now, do you get if somebody wants, I don't know, like big hip hop gold teeth? Do you do that too?
Well, I'm very capable of doing it. Actually, I'm in the process of making one for a very white friend of mine.
of course.
Yeah, he's he makes a lot of money, like, off, you know, in another state, and then he wants me to just make him a really cheesy grill.
Fantastic. Let me ask you this, just as before we talk about people missing their teeth. Why is it that so many times, first of all, please do explain to me, just in very simple, brief terms, what a cap is? Because I don't even really know what a cap is.
Cap really isn't an actual, I mean, that's just kind of a layman's term for, you know, a crown. A cap is basically just, it's a metal understructure that goes over the stump that the doctor grinds your tooth down to. And see, what I was wondering about was, on that statistic, is if they meant, you know, actually grinding away the original tooth or pulling it out completely.
Why do so many, I don't want to say so many, but why, like, Gina Davis is who I'm talking about. I'm not going to be coy. Why is it that you see sometimes somebody that they have caps put on their teeth, or, you know, whatever the actual term is, and they're just huge and ugly and clearly the wrong size, and it's like no one told them or they didn't have access to a mirror?
Well, what's funny is, you know, people in Hollywood and, you know, California mainly, they all go out and get those Da Vinci veneers, which I think is a complete joke. And it's a total waste of money, but they go out and they get those because they want these huge billboards sticking out of their mouth. And it just, you know, yeah, you're right. It looks ridiculous. And I don't think anyone bothers to tell them because, well, you know, when you make that much money, you can do whatever the hell you want.
Fair enough. All right, so you believe the statistic to be true, that 100 million people are missing like 10 teeth.
Oh, you would be surprised at how many of the same names I see come through our lab when I'm putting teeth or making teeth for them.
Now, to be fair, how much of that, do you think a lot of that is because of drugs? Because, and I hate to sound like an old person, but you hear so much about, like, meth mouth and people who do a lot of meth, and whether it's the chemicals or they just forget to brush for like 10 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, it, people that do drugs. And then we've had people come in who've, you know, call them Shark Boy because they kind of, they're unfortunately, they're born with basically shark teeth. They're, you know, little fangs. It's a pretty bizarre world out there. But, you know, so I would say that's pretty accurate. And for instance, my parents, you know, they grew up, they didn't get any dental coverage.
Right. So it was a whole lot of, like, I'll fix that with some pliers.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. That is the white man's perspective. Thank you, my friend.
You're very welcome.
There you go. Justin Whiteman, ladies and gentlemen. All right. Fantastic. 503-733-2970. I'm so glad that guy called us that day and identified himself as being named White Man. It's just, that's a bit you can't even create. It just has to happen organically. All right, here's what's coming up. CNN radio correspondent Amanda Moyer is going to be joining us from Atlanta to talk about Paris Hilton later on. Peter Carlin from The Oregonian going to be joining us at 2 o'clock to talk Sopranos. And Entourage, which was also, I don't know how that show continues to be almost flawless. I would say, I can only think of one episode, and offhand I can't even think of one episode it was. There was an Entourage a couple years ago that I felt was a little lackluster, but I mean, that show continues to be about as close to perfect as anything on television could be. I mean, it's a half-hour kind of fizzy comedy, and that, you know, that's hard to sustain, that tone, but they've done a nearly perfect job of it. So we'll talk Sopranos and Entourage with Peter Carlin. Coming up in just a few minutes, Tim Riley with the new NewsHour. We'll take a break here. We'll come back. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Don't go anywhere. The Rick Emerson Show continues next. Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. In just moments, we join Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Let's see. Just a couple random emails here. Rick, any and all Simpsons fans need to get to Lloyd Cinemas right now. Doesn't say why. Oh, it's because I think they got that display. I think they got the full couch display of the Simpsons for that movie, which is coming out. Which I know I should be caring about. I'm just really not. I don't know why.
Full couch display, what, like a mock living room?
But yeah, I think it's like them sitting on the couch in the living room. I think it's, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I think it might have been Chris Neelan that sent me a photograph of that. What else do we have here? Rick, seems that an unknown event caused shattered nerves and startled sleepers today in Hillsborough. Please look into this ear-shattering occurrence. You just believed that was thunder.
Yeah, it was accompanied right after that by rain.
Well, there you go. Wait, it was just weather.
Thunder. Boom.
So It was the, never mind. I was going to make a Spirit God joke. It's pointless. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
One of the suspects in that terrorist plot to blow up New York's JFK Airport has an Oregon connection.
Uh-oh.
Now, this fellow is Russell DeFreitas. He is a U.S. citizen native to Guyana and a former JFK air cargo employee. And he was employed by Evergreen Eagle, which is in McMinnville. When asked if the company had heard the news, Evergreen replied, no, not yet. According to Evergreen Eagle's air site, a website, they provide reliable ground handling services to more than 35 domestic airports, including New York's JFK, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, O'Hare, and a whole bunch of others. And that's Evergreen out of McMinnville.
And this is, so what is it these guys, they were going to, first of all, I know that there's been a lot of talk this morning about whether this is a big story or not. I know the New York Times put it on page 37.
Yeah.
There was, they buried
it. Well,
it
already printed the Sunday paper.
I don't mean to sound glib or flip about the whole thing, but don't you just sort of assume... Here's my thing about people attempting to do bad things to other bad
these
people.
These always come out during the weekend just to scare you and ruin it for you.
I mean, I just sort of take it as an article of faith that there's always idiots out there. There's always some guy in a basement with a gun who's planning to go shoot some people. There's always some guy trying to build a bomb somewhere. There's always somebody
trying
to...
machine or...
Or time machine.
Napoleon Dynamites in the world are always coming up with these things.
There's just, I mean, the world is filled. Look, there's 5 billion people on Earth. I mean, if 0.001 of them are nutcases bent on mass destruction, then it means there's probably one on your block. So sleep well. There's nothing you can do about it.
No.
They capture the guys. They're not going to blow it up. Whatever. It's not that I don't care as such. There's just nothing I can do, so I don't worry about it too much. If a guy's going to blow up my neighborhood, he's going to blow up my neighborhood, and there's exactly squat that I can do about it. So I don't really spend a whole lot of time getting all stressed.
New York City Police Commissioner Ray Kelly tells Face the Nation that extradition proceedings are moving ahead in Trinidad to bring this fellow back.
There's one individual who we believe is in Trinidad. He's a Guyanese, but he is in Trinidad. The three others are in custody.
Turning Guyanese, I really think so.
Turning Guyanese. Turning Guyanese.
See, that wasn't even really funny when I said it, but it was your repetition of it that made it hilarious. Once, not so funny. Twice, three times, repeated by Tim Riley. Genius! Anyway, so they arrested these guys because they were going to blow up a fuel line. You know,
it would have been impossible to do it.
I mean, it was like these idiots that they arrested. What were those guys they arrested a year and a half ago? Because they were plotting to do something or other, and that's the thing that we were supposed to be terrified of for like a week. And it was like, yes. when we got down to it, it turned out that they purchased some boots. That was like as far as they'd gotten.
Yeah.
They bought some boots from some outdoor store, and they were going to use them to do some kind of evil.
Well, we're living in times like the 1950s, and we will till the next president comes
around. They're on every block.
This commissioner said the suspects could have gone through with their heinous crime.
We don't know exactly what this case could have changed into, could have morphed into, if they were able to successfully create a partnership with this militant group.
Didn't he say he didn't know? But the sentence says he knew.
The best part, I don't know, but let me now make some things up and then pass them off as fact. Mm-hmm. You will not notice this. Like, you can totally see him doing the Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, wave at the camera as he gives those. This is like that, I think Dennis Miller was all the bump on his gums about today, that the business of, what's his name? I always want to say Naeem in a jet, but that's the guy from Office Space. Who's the president of Iran?
I don't know who it is this week.
Starts with an A. Some angry-looking guy. Yeah. Anyway, he was on the front of... And again,
they're going to end up giving him a tract home in Southern California anyway at some point. Flying him out of there.
Sitting next to Daniel Ortega somewhere. Whatever happened to Daniel Ortega? I miss that guy. He was interesting.
Oh, yeah, he was.
I don't even know if he's dead or alive. Daniel Ortega. Dead or alive. Somebody don't call. Somebody email me about that. Or you can call if you want to, I suppose. Well, let's run down the list. Muammar Gaddafi, alive.
Is he?
No, he's alive. He's totally alive. He's alive and I think still bitching about stuff. And still alive. Muammar Gaddafi is just...
Well, his time went out when they stopped parroting him on Saturday Night Live.
I suppose. It also helps that we blew up his house 5 or 6 times. I think that quieted him down for a while. Muammar Gaddafi, alive but irrelevant. Manuel Noriega in prison? Yes?
Maybe.
Are you saying maybe like you don't know, or maybe like that's what they want you to think?
I don't know what happened to him. They said he went to prison, and you never hear anything about him anymore.
He's like the... Well, you know, there's a whole bunch of people that we send to prison, and then you never know if they're actually there or not. Let me ask you this. Remember those guys, those idiots in Montana, the free men?
Oh, yeah.
Remember those guys? It was Montana, right?
It's always
right.
Montana.
Whatever happened to them? There was a huge standoff?
Oh, yeah.
Where did they go?
Oh, Montana's a big place. It's the whole state of nothing.
But I thought that they were going to jail at some point, and I'm not even sure if they ever did. Let me ask you this. You remember the David Koresh guys, the Branch Davidians?
Oh, yeah.
Where are they at? I mean, the ones that
I
we did...
They're trying to start a new Branch Davidian.
But I thought that they were in jail.
Well, there's some fresh ones.
They grew new ones.
Yeah.
All right. The ones that we didn't burn into small little cinders.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so there you go. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, the guy who's the president of Iran, Baba the Jed, whatever his name is. Dennis Miller was just apoplectic this morning that we're not paying more attention to Iran's threat to eradicate Israel from planet Earth. And the only reason we're not paying attention to it, and by we, I mean
Israel
us,
can take care of themselves.
Right. Yeah, first of all, Israel doesn't need anybody's help.
Anytime we invent something, we quietly give that to them. Please try it out on Monday and let us know and get back to us.
Here, we have this brand new weapon. Will you please use it on an
I mean, you don't think a country the size of Oregon City can possibly come up with all these new things every day.
That's the deal. You want to talk about a country that is just, I mean, you hear the phrase armed to the teeth?
Yeah.
They're armed to the back, let me switch on Dennis Miller mode. They're armed to the medulla oblongata, my friend. Israel has got, it's like 5,000 guns for every man, woman, and child there, which is great. I'm all for it. Have fun. First of all, Israel, can take care of themselves. And secondly, the only reason I'm not paying attention to Iran threatening to get rid of Israel is because doesn't Iran threaten that all the time?
Yeah.
Isn't that like on the front page of, that's in every day's paper right next to the jumble puzzle. You know what I mean? It's like, there's the Dear Abby, and then there's the jumble, and then there's we will eradicate the Zionist menace, and then there's like Calvin and Hobbes or whatever. That's it. It's every day with them. So, you know, whatever. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, good afternoon. It's Greg from Canby.
You're awfully perky today.
Well, I wasn't drunk last night like you were. Hey, we should try and get a hold of Clyde because there's a try and sober him up because there's a tremendous conspiratorial theory here that Evergreen Airlines has long been associated with
CIA.
That's
the whole story. They were Air America. We know all about that.
Now, were they or was that a...
They just strongly suggested.
When we say Air America, by the way, we don't mean the bankrupt and failed radio network. We do mean the airline that flew secret missions for the government during Vietnam, blah, 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 right? Is that the Air America? Yes. It was made into a movie with Mel Gibson and Robert Downey Jr., which is the only reason I know about it. All right.
Now, let me get this straight. Tim is actually offering up facts as a way of dissuading us from engaging in rumor.
Yes, I know.
I don't have any facts here.
No, I mean, and all my stuff comes from a Robert Downey Jr. film, so, you know.
Anyway, I think it's interesting that you got the CIA in this, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's been great.
Fantastic. I like it when even if a call
which
doesn't...
is related to the Air Museum, which is how they managed to get both a Spitfire and a Messerschmitt in the same museum.
Is that true?
Rumor has it. How does some place in McMinnville get a bunch of old war planes?
That is true. I hadn't really thought about that.
McMinnville, Oregon.
Is that the
10,000 people?
As opposed to McMinnville, New York.
Yeah.
Is that the plane place that is the Spruce Goose?
Huh?
It is kind of interesting, actually, now that you think about it. So, wait a minute. You're saying...
I'm not saying.
You're passing along that some people believe that Evergreen Airlines, or whatever it's called, is associated with, or that Evergreen and Air America are one and the same?
At one time.
I see.
Outside of McMinnville.
I wonder how we could... You know, that's really the key to success in this country, is to do some secret favors for the government, and then just to stay on the government teat forever. I wonder how we could do that. What is it that we could... Is there anything the government needs done that we could help them with? I mean, is there any sort of disinformation they need passed? I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to operate, look, for the right amount of money.
I mean, we renew it. Numerous things we know are wrong every day.
Yes, we do.
But we just don't have time to come up with the facts.
And
that's not our function here.
And we don't bill anybody for it. We're doing this on the com, as it were. Mm-hmm. We're doing it on spec. I am absolutely willing to engage in any sort of propagandist activities that the government requires. Our services are for sale. Mm-hmm. We can be bought for less than you might think.
So if you would like us to, you know, if you'd like us to distribute or further any sort of the patent falsehoods, you just let us know. Oh, by the way, I think we got an answer to the Ortega thing. Hello, sir.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, Rick?
Hi. Yeah.
I was just going to say that Daniel Ortega, alive.
And
in
what?
Fact,
what is he doing?
I believe, he's the president of Nicaragua these days, I believe, again.
Now he was,
although he says he's not like a big communist like he was before.
Well, that's good.
None of them are.
No. He was the president of Nicaragua, and then he wasn't, and now he is again?
Yeah, apparently so, yeah.
Right. You know, can I tell you, here's the thing about Daniel Ortega. He's one of those guys that, really, to be honest now, and I know this makes me a stupid American, but I don't really even remember why I care about him. He's one of those guys that was all on the front of, like, Newsweek and Time Magazine for, like, 3-4 years. And now I don't even really remember why. I mean, I know he was the president of Nicaragua, but I don't remember why that mattered. I mean, he's just, it's from that weird Reagan-esque period of history where we seem to be either at war with or secretly selling guns to everybody, often the same countries, and I can't really remember why I care about him.
Okay, well, anyway, best show ever.
Thanks. There you go. He clearly, yeah, we clearly wandered off the beaten path with him pretty early on. Was he Time's Man of the Year? Was that true?
Oh, it may have been.
Scotty is saying that he was the Daniel. How do you know that? Oh, that's creepy.
He's well read.
Seriously, if Scotty J knows that, that's the seventh seal being broken, right? That you're kidding? I don't know. I don't remember. All I remember, here's the only image I can bring up in my brain of Daniel Ortega. Who, and this is, by the way, the only talk radio station in the entire country talking about Daniel Ortega today, is that there was this Time Magazine caricature of him where it was him with his glasses and the reflection in his glasses, because sometimes, you know, you see a reflection, whatever the person's looking at, the reflection in his glasses was the hammer and sickle of the USSR. That's all I remember about Daniel Ortega.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right, we're done with that. Here's Tim Riley.
So getting back to this alleged terrorist plot here. The FBI thought it was so important that they sent out their assistant director to be on ABC this week and explain that this requires the FBI to be focused in the 360-degree radius. I thought that was Anderson Cooper who did that. But the FBI also is focused on the 360-degree radius.
Get Anderson Cooper on this stat every moment of the day.
Part of what we do every day is to try and determine, are we looking in all the places we're supposed to? Are we getting all the information that we can? One of the reasons we ran this last case, or the Fort Dix case, for more than a year.
Well, apparently
he is. Is there?
He is only the assistant.
It's like there's going to be more there. Is this like the Oscars where they just played him off after 15 seconds? You're done.
Yes.
All right. Oh, wait, is somebody? The love of. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
You probably know what's coming, Rick. Isn't the disinformation channel Fox News?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't. There you go. Yes. Yes. Thank you. All right. And he's out. That was it. Hi, Rick Emerson Show.
Hi. I just wanted to clarify. You guys are confusing Manuel Ortega of Panama with Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua.
No. Who wants to take this, Tim?
I thought it was Daniel all along that we were speaking of.
You're thinking of Manuel Noriega, sir.
Ah, that's it. Yeah, see, I knew there was confusion yeah. there.
All right. You have shamed yourself and your family.
Ah, well, sorry.
Thank you. Well done. Here's Tim Riley. Fantastic.
Well, let's talk about the boy who got stuck in the chimney. Firefighters pulled an 11-year-old boy out of a chimney in Troutdale over the weekend. Apparently, he slid down and became stuck. J.C. Morales said he climbed on the roof just to have a little fun, went down the chimney after a golf club he saw inside. He lost his grip and slid 15 feet from the chimney and got stuck for about 20 minutes before anybody heard his cries for help.
Wait, how old is he?
He's 11.
All right. Really old enough to know better, I would
say.
Well,
his aunt, who was supposed to be babysitting him, lowered a rope to him but couldn't pull him out. I thought I was going to die. I was really scared. Firefighters arrived, pulled him to safety. He suffered some nasty scrapes on his back, but otherwise he's okay. And he's been grounded for 2 weeks. And by the way, the golf club he was after, it's still stuck in the chimney.
In my head, this just cues that Phoebe Cates sequence from Gremlins. She's talking about her dead dad. Why was it to say why the golf club was in the chimney? First of all, I thought chimneys were manufactured now so that morons couldn't get stuck inside them. I thought they had some weird...
This might be a pre-moron chimney.
It doesn't have the moron hatch on it.
No.
All right. So he was... so there was a... Does it say why the golf club...
No, it did not. That is a mystery. Isn't
How would a golf club even get inside your chimney?
And why did he look in the chimney in the first place looking for a golf club?
Seriously. What kind of... where is this at?
Croakdale.
What kind of operation are you running out there in Trapville? I want answers.
All right. Let's see. This is...
Do we want to take more calls about Evergreen and the CIA?
Oh, yes, by all means.
Okay. Hi. Hello. How can I help you?
Hey, Rick.
Hi.
Evergreen Aviation was at Air America, but there was, it is CIA. Evergreen is CIA, or part of it was, but they were, they shipped arms. They were used by Reagan to ship arms into Nicaragua and the Middle East. And Clinton used them a lot to do his nefarious stuff. If you read books about Clinton and that Mina, Arkansas stuff, Evergreen Aviation is all over it. So
this is, and so Nicaragua, where, coming full circle, where Daniel Ortega was president.
Is currently president again. He just got elected in again.
Fantastic. All right, well, it's good to know he's still making money out there. It's like when you read about Charlie Pride playing Branson. You know, it's good to know that he's still got a career.
Well, it's nice that old communists can get jobs.
Well, seriously.
Get good, decent employment.
No, I'm with you on that. Thank you, my friend.
Maybe Bush will have a job.
He'll always have a job as long as there's a CIA. This final thought on this. Yeah, this email says, Rick, I went to school with a guy who flew for Evergreen. After drinks, he would share stories of landing on dirt strips in Central America. After landing, some guys in fatigues with machine guns... I'm sorry, after landing, comma, some guys in fatigues with machine guns would unload heavy unmarked boxes and he'd fly home empty. He doesn't work there anymore. Okay, there you go. And we're done. Here's Tim Riley.
All right. Well, Oregon could be first in the nation again, this time with a rabid bat. State health officials say a rat found in Deschutes County may be the first one to test positive for a rabies virus. Oh, this isn't a rabid bat. It's a rabid rat. I'm sorry. Officials say rabies in Oregon is found mostly in bats, but hardly ever in rats.
I thought
I got this confused.
I thought that everything had rabies. Then when you're like, you're growing up, your parents wouldn't let you touch anything on earth ever. It could have rabies. Doesn't matter what it is. What's that? Well, it's a leaf. Don't touch it. It has rabies. I remember my parents when I was a kid, I would see mostly my dad, who was kind of an overprotective nutcase. He was afraid of me touching the weirdest... Bless you. He was afraid of me touching the weirdest things. Like, I would see, like, a feather sitting on the ground. And he wouldn't let me... Like, if I was... I'm making my parents sound like freaks, but, I mean, I would be walking down the street, and I would see, like, a stray feather blowing along that a bird had shed at some point. And I would reach for the feather, and my dad would just... As though it were covered with the plague. Don't touch it. It's probably got rabies. First of all, I don't think birds get rabies. Secondly... And then apparently rats don't even get rabies, or very rarely, right?
Right.
So
an Oregon rat.
So it's pretty much bats. And you're not going to get rabies from a bat anyway, because bats probably aren't going to bite you. They fly away from you, because they got the what? They got the sonar, or whatever the hell that is. The whole thing is goddamn ridiculous.
It's going to be stopped.
Now.
Well, this is unfortunate. Grief counselors are on hand at Evergreen High School today after police said a student was killed by a classmate. Apparently, the person driving the car who killed the classmate was distracted by a bee and swerved into the bike lane, colliding with 17-year-old Daniel Jackson. This happened in the Coop. Officials at the scene said they found the bee in the car afterwards. And the person has been released to his parents, so criminal charges have been filed.
Mm.
A Polish man has woken up from a coma after 19 years to find out the Communist Party is no longer in power and food is no longer rationed. Jan Grabowski fell into a coma after he was hit by a train in 1988. Now I see people on the streets with mobile phones, and there were so many goods in the shops, it makes my head spin.
Wait, and he lives in Poland?
Yes.
So that's... So, I mean, because it's not like their economy's all thriving and flourishing these days.
Well, they're ruled by pretty much by fascists now, these two twin brothers who are child actors.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Wait, I'm trying to think of a cultural reference. Now I can't even come up with that.
They're almost mean twins.
I was trying to come up with Kirstie McNichol and Jimmy McNichol, but
they're two brothers.
Yeah, but see, I can't think of twin brother actors.
Why is it, what is it, do you win, like, the presidency of Poland in the lottery or something? Is that the deal?
Yeah, well, they go through several governments within 5 minutes.
And when the, I was gonna make a Kuczynski joke, but that's Romania.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, in any event.
So when this Polish man went into a coma, there was only tea and vinegar in chops, and meat was rationed.
Only tea and vinegar. What would you like with your pie? Would you like a nice glass full of cider vinegar?
Like the, what I'm being offered on this... Menu. Well, never mind.
No.
That's something I'm not going to... No, I'm not going to do that.
Client alert.
Okay.
Moving right along. Oh, wait, hold on. Let's see. Let's get... is this Michelle? Hi, Michelle. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I'm a camp counselor in the summers, and I actually had a kid get bit by a bat.
Was he taunting the bat? Was the kid asking for it? You can be honest.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
He loves horses, and she was really annoying. But she got bit by a bat in the night, and they had to whisk her away in an ambulance, and they gave her, like, 100 shots in her stomach.
The rabies shots, that's the other thing I remember from being a kid, is they talk about, like, you know, if you get bit by something, and if they can't find the thing and test it for rabies, then it's bad, because it's, like, 100 shots in your stomach with, like, a 9-foot needle. Yeah.
Yeah, and the only, if they find the bat, then they decapitate it and, like, look at its brains, apparently.
Yeah, but
we couldn't find the bat.
Well, no, because... It's not like the other bats are going to give it up. They stick together, those bats. You know
exactly.
How they are. So
right.
So she got like 100 shots, but she was obnoxious, so it sounds like it probably did her a world of good. Maybe it straightened her out a little bit.
She was a terrible, terrible child. It was good that it happened.
So it was karma. It was rabid karma. Now, let me ask you this real quickly, though. Now, if you get bit by something and then they give you the shots, does it stop the rabies from happening even if you've got it, or does it just... cure it? In other words, like, will you ever know if you were going to get rabies?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I have no idea, actually.
Right.
I just know that it really, really, really hurt.
All right. So the moral is don't be a little bastard and bad things won't happen to you.
Exactly. And thanks, Rick.
Thank you. You won't fall down chimneys or get 100 shots in your stomach. All right. Here's Tim Riley.
So let's talk a little bit about that boring debate. I found a couple of choice sound cuts here. Did anybody watch it last night?
Well, I did. I watched little segments of it. I couldn't stay away for the whole thing.
John Edwards said the Bush administration uses the war on terror to have its way.
But what this global war on terror bumper sticker, political slogan, that's all it is, all it's ever been, was intended to do was for George Bush to use it to justify everything he does. The ongoing war in Iraq, Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, spying on Americans, torture.
Yeah, I just can't take him seriously. He just doesn't. He seems like a great vice president. Mm-hmm. That guy just doesn't. He doesn't have like a presidential feel to him, which is important for the American public. The American public doesn't vote for people. That's why it's amazing that Jimmy Carter was ever elected president. And it really is stunning. I mean, Jimmy Carter, you look at that guy, even back in the day, he didn't look anything like a president. I mean, it was only because of Nixon and Watergate, I think, was Carter ever elected president.
Well, he was regarded as an outsider.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, because he just seemed like a bumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not saying he was. He's a smart guy. But, I mean, even now, I mean, you see Jimmy Carter interviewed, and it's just impossible to believe that guy could ever been voted into the highest office in the country. So it is with John Edwards. As somebody once said, voting for president is like voting for a national dad, and John Edwards doesn't seem like your dad. He seems like a really kind of cool older uncle named Bob.
Yeah. See, we have more of these things. You know who sounded good last night is, and he has no chance of being, well, elected. He's not enough buzz, and he doesn't have enough money. New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson.
Yeah.
Now, he seems like a pretty smart guy, but...
We have serious problems in the Middle East. Our great ally, Israel, which I think needs buttressing, right now is less safe than it was when President Bush came in. We need a constant Middle East peace process. President Clinton gave me two good jobs. I want to pay him back and make a Middle East peace on.
I don't really know if saying President Clinton gave me two good jobs is a way to endear yourself to the American public or not. I really honestly don't know.
They're looking at Hillary.
And by the way, there is no... Boy, that was a weird moment. I did see this last night. There was a weird moment when somebody brought up Bill Clinton. And I don't even know if Hillary answered this. Somebody brought up Bill Clinton and the don't ask, don't tell thing. And I'm not even sure... Did Hillary even answer it?
Yeah, well, kind of.
Because Bill Clinton is still so popular. He is sort of the Democratic Reagan. He's still so popular, like 8 years after the fact, that you can tell they hate to say anything bad about him at all. But they did take some shots at him as a way of taking a shot at her. I didn't hear what she said, though.
Yeah, here's what she said about
Barry Goldwater once said, "You don't have to be straight to shoot straight." And I think he was right. And I believe we should open up our military.
All right. Well, okay, there you go.
And Dennis Gucinich was there, too, and we have to let him say something.
And we could have a productive evening here right now if all of my colleagues on the stage or in the Congress would commit to telling the Democratic leadership not even to offer a funding bill. Because that's really the way to end the war, Wolf. Just say no money. The war's over.
Who wants to come see my car that runs on wheat? Jesus. The guy, talk about a guy who's just, every time he opens his mouth to speak, it just frustrates me because he's not, like, he's not weird enough to be entertaining. He's just up there taking up time that could be used by somebody who might actually be elected to something someday.
This guy's kind of interesting. The former Alaska Senator Mike Gravel.
He's great. He's totally great.
From him.
He's like the one who they asked him, I don't know, it was in the last debate.
He actually answered the question.
And he's the one who was popping off about how he was going to legalize pot or something. I think it was at the last debate. What about the drug problem? I will legalize marijuana tomorrow. Like, with the first thing out of his mouth. Like, he didn't even gild the lily. He was just like, I will make pot legal. So, all right.
So here's his first.
Four of these people here will say that it's George Bush's war. It was facilitated by the Democrats. They brought the resolution up. One of them authored, co-authored it here, standing here. And so it's, sure, it's George Bush's war, but it's a Democrats' war also.
Yeah.
And he's a Democrat.
Yeah.
You only see $3? Just watch those wheels turn. There's another $4, which is what we spend to keep American troops around the world to keep the price. So you're paying more than $7 a gallon. You just don't know it.
You gotta like that guy. Fantastic. Yeah. Not gonna be elected, but he's great.
No.
All right.
And one more from Bill Richardson discussing his plan for the U.S. leaving Iraq this year.
I have the strongest plan on Iraq. I withdraw all our forces by the end of this calendar year, but with no residual forces. And all the candidates want to keep residual forces in Iraq an undetermined amount.
Yeah, we leave. Well, that's the thing is we leave. Just sort of like a sticky trace amount everywhere we go. We just leave the sort of militaristic DNA all over the place. We go somewhere and we just leave forces that just hang out forever and ever and ever and ever. So that's
well,
kind of
now,
our deal.
Well, now the plan is to make this sort of like Korea and leave our troops there for years and years and years.
Fantastic. Well,
so that's the new plan.
Okay.
From W.
By the way, this email said we should take a break here and we'll come back. We have launched today our what we're calling our almost live stream. It's basically a segment behind. So rather than having to wait till the next day, you get it like, I don't know, 20 minutes late it starts. Rick, after being teased with the live feed, I started playing Hour 1. I love how clear it is. The audio mixing sounds great. Almost like it's not radio, says Tony in the Coupe. So there you go. Well, thank you, sir. So for those of us listening to us on the Almost Live stream, hey, it's 503-733-2970. Back after this with more of the AM 970 Noon News Hour. Stay there! It's the Rick Emerson radio program. 503-733-2970. Hey, remember John Ramsey, the father of JonBenet Ramsey?
I do, yes.
Guess who he's dating? You'll never guess in a million years.
Mickey Hilton.
No, no, but that's a great guess.
Oh.
Well done. This is from Fox News, but I do think it's true regardless. In a match made in tabloid heaven. The father of... I don't even know how to feel about this. I guess I don't feel it one way or the other about it. It's just weird. The father of murdered child beauty queen JonBenet Ramsey and the mother of missing an Aruba teenager Natalie Holloway are dating, Fox News has learned. How messed up is that? That's fantastic. Well done. John Ramsey, 63, and Beth... Here's an unfortunate name. Beth Holloway Twitty, 46, have been romantically involved since January 2007. So there you go.
Didn't his wife just die like
yes,
a few
she
months
did.
Back?
Yes,
what about
she
R.
did.
Bell?
Well, his cancer, her... What?
R. Bell got married like 2 days after his wife
like
died.
Like he had that girl in a steamer trunk in the basement just waiting? Okay. You just picture Art Bell bringing that girl food and water down to the fruit cellar every now and again? It'll be a few more weeks. All right.
No need to be a mail order bride.
So the couple has been spotted openly holding hands and canoodling in Alabama. What a sentence. Hi, we're canoodling in Alabama. Thanks for coming on out to see us tonight. And blah, 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 blah.
Alabama
blah.
Is for lovers of their cousins.
And the Ramsey's wife and JonBenet's mother, Patsy Ramsey, died last June, so it's been a year, of ovarian cancer. Twitty was officially divorced from her husband, I swear to God, her husband, Jug Twitty, in December.
Fantastic.
All right, here's Jim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, John Voight had something to say about Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan. Apparently, being a star isn't as glamorous as it may seem.
There's all sorts of temptations in this part of the world when you get a little celebrity. And if you don't have real strong upbringing and something to fall back on, you can get distracted by a lot of things.
And end up picking trash cans.
Well, as we know, Paris turned herself into sheriff's authorities last night. And her lawyer picked her up at her parents' house at approximately 10:30. So Hilton Hutton, Mommy Kathy, and Sister Nikki then drove down to Men's Central Jail in downtown Los Angeles. Why did they drive there? Not because she wanted to be in jail with other men. It was because the sheriff devised a plan of surrendering miles away from the actual site where Paris was doing time because of the crush of paparazzi. Paris was then driven to jail in Linwood, which is now her home for the next 23 days. Earlier in the evening, Hilton left her house for the MTV Music Awards. After appearing on the red carpet, Hilton went to her parents' house for a brief time, then left with her lawyer to face the music. Let's see, the plans of Paris have not changed, although they pre-screened a woman who was designated her cellmate for the first time.
Now, I didn't think she was going to have a cellmate.
Yeah, then it says that she's going to be in solitary 23 out of 24 hours a day.
It doesn't make any sense. The story I read this morning on Yahoo said she would have no cellmate.
Mm-hmm.
That's the latest I read, too. So there doesn't even seem to be... I guess Amanda maybe will have information on this. Boy, you know, when I saw that Amanda... No disrespect to Amanda Moyer, but when I saw Amanda Moyer was going to be talking to us today, for a minute I thought it was that Rachel McGrath woman in Los Angeles who's British and clearly detests me. So Amanda may not know how to sync with us quite yet, but at least she doesn't openly despise me, as I think Rachel probably does. What's funny is Rachel McGrath has never been back. We talked to her like twice, and then it's like I think Roop had her taken care of or something because she's never reappeared. So
maybe she was an illegal alien. You know how Jim feels about them.
I am not suggesting that Rachel McGrath was an illegal alien. I am not suggesting that she angered the Lou Dobbs side of Jim Roop. But this morning I read two different articles back to back, both of them from the Associated Press, one of them claiming she would have a cellmate, as you said, had been pre-screened, the other claiming she would not have a cellmate. So nobody even really seems to know. But she did go in on Sunday, and I guess it was going to be 45 days, now it's 23, although I read a fascinating article over the weekend, and it's amazing how much I read about this Paris Hilton thing, when really, in the grand scheme of things, I don't care about Paris Hilton, it doesn't affect my life at all. But this is proof that even we are not immune from being sucked into tabloid nonsense and gibberish. That I read this great article this weekend about all the other... the other inmates, because apparently that jail, what is it, the Linwood jail?
Yes.
Apparently it's notoriously overcrowded. Apparently they're terrible conditions. It's like all American jails. It's at like 300% capacity or something. And so apparently the other inmates are already furious at Paris Hilton because she's taking up way more space, proportionally speaking, than she should be. And so apparently they're already like sharpening the shanks for her. So that'll be good. So that something interesting might come of this after all.
Oh, and her hair extensions have to go.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So that's
that. Well, you know there's going to be photos. I mean, I know they're really trying to stem the flow of photographic evidence out of the police, but you know that somebody's going to get a picture, and we're going to get to see it. So,
a Yahats man is facing assault charges after he tried to choke one of his roommates, allegedly. They responded to a home after complaints at 3 a.m. Deputies revealed the 20-year-old Ryan Nance assaulted two of his roommates, putting one of them into a chokehold, and his bail is $22,500. That's a lot more than if Paris Hilton would have done.
Where was this at?
Yahats. It looks like Yachts.
Oh, is Yahats the place where, Wait, hold on. Is that the place where Tonya Harding lives? No, that's Yakult.
Yakult.
Where's Yahats?
It's on the coast.
Are these Indian names?
They're all Indian names.
Hey, remind me to ask you my Indian question later. I have an Indian question that only the Rick Emerson audience can answer.
Does it have to be asked in Indian?
Yeah. Yes. It's a lot of, Well, see, my Indian humor is not really what it should be. If I was a more well-rounded white man, I'd be able to make Indian humor right now. No, I've got nothing. Anyway, I'll ask you the Indian question later on.
About what time?
Be listening for the Indian question segment of our program at around 1:15 today, Tim. We'll be addressing it sounds like I'm on the McNeil Lehrer Report for like 1984. We'll be discussing the Pakistan question today on the McNeil Lehrer Hour. No, we'll be asking the Indian question in the 1 o'clock hour. Wow, this is an ugly thing. A rare find from the deep has the crew at the Seaside Aquarium abuzz. The fish is cute and bizarre at the same time, and it usually lives too deep in the ocean to show up on land. This is called the Oregon ratfish. Apparently, kids from Oregon City brought in the 3-foot-long spotted ratfish over the weekend. They found it in the southern cove outside the Seaside, and it's still alive. The aquarium spokesperson said the spotted ratfish's technical name is Hydrologus colahi. It's also named the ratfish because it looks like a rat.
All I remember is that they used to have that octopus there that you could touch.
That's the one that used to cower in the corner when people looked at it?
Yeah.
That's the ratfish.
Oh, that's a hideous-looking fish.
Well, they're very rare.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
Conducive to Oregon.
This is why the going into outer space thing irritates me so much, because there's all kinds of weird crap on planet Earth we haven't even seen. Like, you watch some of those nature shows, and there's stuff that I swear to God, you would think they were faking it. You would think they were making it up. If it didn't, like, I was watching this, I was telling my wife about this, I was watching this nature show the other day. I don't remember the name of the bird. It's the weirdest, creepiest, creepy's not even the right word, it's just the strangest thing. As Stephen King once said, there are things in the corner of this world that would just turn you white just to look at it. But there, they showed some bird deep in the whatever, deep in like the New Zealand jungle or something. And it's this bird who the way that it gets everything, you know, food and the way that it scares off predators and the way that it does everything is by imitating the sounds of other birds. It's sort of the Rich Little of the bird kingdom. And it has no call of its own. It just imitates the calls of any, and it's one of those birds that is an amazing mimic. The first time it hears something, it can replicate it perfectly. Kind of like a guitarist who hears a song and can immediately play it. And so, like, if it needs to scare off a predator, it can sound like a much bigger bird. If it needs to get food, it can sound like a much smaller bird, so it can get into some area of the woods. Anyway, so it's this phenomenal mimic. But they were noting, I wish I could remember what the name of the bird was, but the bird can imitate any sound that it hears flawlessly. And so the camera is on the shot of this bird, and they're showing all the different things it can do. And so the bird opens its mouth, and it sounds like a canary. And then the bird opens its mouth, and it sounds like a parakeet. And then the bird opens its mouth, and it sounds like a cockatoo or whatever the hell it is. And then I swear to God, because, of course, there's humans there who have driven in and are photographing the bird. The bird, the next thing it does is it opens its mouth, and it makes the sound of a camera shutter followed by the film rewinding. It was the creepiest thing ever. I mean, the bird is just doing normal bird calls, and then it opens its mouth, and it goes like, click, and it's the sound of like a Nikon camera. And then the thing that really effed with me is because it's in a forest, and it's a forest in which humans work sometimes. The bird opens its mouth, and because there was logging going on somewhere within earshot at some point, one of the sounds that the bird just cycles through that it makes to amuse itself is the sound of a chainsaw. I mean, it's the freakiest thing, where they show the bird, and the bird's sitting on a branch singing to itself, and then it stops for a minute, and then, like, it's like a jukebox. The next sound that it decides to make is the sound of a chainsaw. So the bird's just sitting there, and it opens its mouth, and you hear this, and it's like coming out of a bird. And then it goes back to sounding like a parakeet or something. It's the freakiest thing I've ever seen in my life. And then they showed it making like a car alarm sound, because I guess a car alarm driven by one of the cameramen had gone off at some point. So there's a bird sitting there imitating like the car alarm from a 1998 Toyota Cressida. Just freaky. So,
can you buy one of these birds?
I would, man, in a heartbeat.
I would need a sound effects library.
I would
just poke the bird.
It'd be like our instant replay.
Yeah.
So it would be like our Cardomatic. Really, you have never been freaked out until you've seen a bird open its mouth and make the noise of a chainsaw flawlessly. That's the kind of stuff that'll keep you up at night just wondering what the hell it is out there that controls this universe. It's a strange thing. Here's Tim Riley.
So even though Fred Thompson hasn't officially declared his candidacy for president, it looks like all of Bush's supporters are flocking to him, so we'll see what happens with that. He was the keynote speaker at the Virginia Republican Party's annual gala last night. Fred Thompson was.
What better place to start than the Commonwealth, where all this freedom stuff started in the first place?
This freedom stuff. That's, you know what that is, Tim? That's the language of the common man right there.
It is.
This freedom stuff. He's speaking to the great unwashed in their own tongue.
He's the kind of fellow you like to have a beer with.
Exactly.
That works very well, you know. Anyway, illusionist Chris Angel is performing a death-defying stunt in Times Square.
Hey, Chris, is this the mind freak guy?
Yeah, he has 24 hours to escape a steel-enforced glass cube hanging 40 feet above the ground before it comes crashing down.
I'm going to be encased in a cube that's less than 4 feet in diameter. It will be filled with 6,000 pounds of cement by the public who's welcome to come here. This is free. This is an event that's going to last for 24 hours right here in Times Square.
And he expects to live.
Here's the thing about this guy. I will admit that he's somewhat less irritating than David Blaine. And I don't know why
David Blaine needs to fail. I'm just being an American.
I know what you're really saying there. And I'm with you, sir. I find your ideas intriguing. Would like to subscribe to your newsletter. Why? Okay. This is probably the wrong time to do this because it's going to trigger a whole thing. And we won't have time to do it because we got to get to Amanda Moyer and whatever. Screw it. It's our show. We can do whatever we want.
Yes.
David Blaine, who we got to by mentioning Chris Angel, who is the mind freak guy. And don't get me wrong, I don't wish to impugn the fine advertising that airs on this radio station. But have you heard the radio ad for that new Chris Angel special?
I haven't. No. When does it run?
It runs. It was running during Dennis Miller. I think it's a Net spot. I think it's a Westwood One commercial. Oh. It might be a local spot, but I don't think so. I think it's a network spot. And it sounds like a parody of a commercial for one of these weird extreme magician guys. And it's what kind of man will cover himself in a sheet of glass and then let a bulldozer drive over his body? I swear to God, that's the copy. And I'm listening to it, and I thought it was a joke. I thought it was like maybe an ad for like some wacky Penn and Teller thing where they deconstruct stupid magician tricks or whatever. But David Blaine, let's go around the room here. You hate David Blaine,
yes?
Right? Sarah, do you hate David Blaine?
I don't really care either way.
All right, but you don't like him. Does he irritate you, David Blaine?
No. I think it's more of a joke than anything. Like I don't respect him.
See, but well, that does see that again. Like, why don't you respect him?
He just seems really goofy.
See? Okay, well, let's... Scotty J, David Blaine. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or no opinion? Does David Blaine down? See, you don't like David Blaine? I hate David Blaine, and I don't know why. David Blaine is one of those guys, he falls into that category of celebrity, of person, that I hate for no readily definable reason. Scotty has defined his reason. He's weird talking. All right, thanks so much, Scotty.
He is kind of cute, though.
Well, you know, he was dating Fiona Apple, you know. I hated him for that for a while, but now I just hate him on general principle. Fiona Apple's not really my type, except that she seems crazy and like she cuts herself. So I don't know why I hate David Blaine, but goddamn do I want to see him just eaten by something. I want to see just held down and just eaten by crazed weasels. I don't know why it is. You know who else I hate? And I've mentioned this off the air to Sarah. I don't think we've ever had an on-air discussion about this. You know who else I hate? And I have this written down. Remember we were going to do that the Rick Emerson Wheel of Topics at one point, and we actually got the prize wheel sound? Wait, hold on. I'm going to spin the Wheel of Topics right now, except I know where it's going to land. I hate that Jared guy from Subway. I don't know why.
You've talked about this at great length on the air.
I think I've talked about it with you, but I don't think I've talked about it on the air. Maybe I haven't. If so, I'm doing it again. It's one of my greatest... It's a recurrent.
He's very seldom mentioned anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no logical or rational reason why I should dislike that Jared guy. But you know what? I'm not the only one. I bet right now, if you could do some sort of Insta straw poll of the entire populace of this country, you would find that I would guess... A majority, I would say 65% of Americans dislike the Jared from Subway guy on site. And Scotty's typing on the screen because I want his money. That's not true. There's all kinds of people in this world that have money who I don't dislike. I hate that bastard from Subway. I despise him. And I don't hate Subway as such. I have no problem with Subway or its food. I mean, you know, sometimes I eat there, sometimes I don't. Whatever. It's not Subway. It's that guy. It's Jared. Same thing with David Blaine. I dislike him intensely. The Chris Angel guy, the only reason I dislike Chris Angel is because he's a little too self-consciously melodramatic. He's a little too over there. He's like that Lance Burton guy. Lance Burton's the same way. I don't know why. I think I dislike magicians. I think that's really what this comes down to with these guys. I think I dislike magicians for reasons that I really can't put my finger on, except for Penn and Teller, who are very kind of... I think maybe I like them because they seem to hate most... I think they dislike other magicians the same way that we dislike most other radio people. So, anyway, in any event, should they go in the... Scotty's asking if they should go in the book. I think...
I don't think David Blaine's going to go in the book. I think nature's going to take care of that for me one of these days. That Jared guy might go in the book
at some
point.
That Chris Angel guy can go.
He bugs me. I don't know why he bugs me. Anyway, do you have that sound clip from him again?
I got another one. He's going to describe what he does.
What I do is I try to blur the line between reality and illusion. A lot of what I do is real, lots of an illusion. This is an escape.
Yeah, I see, and I just want it to go horribly, miserably, catastrophically
wrong.
The cable
will snap.
That's what I root for.
It will at one of these points.
I mean, do you remember that? Do you remember with David Blaine? I'm going to be encased in a block of ice in the middle of Times Square. And I think maybe it's because I can't remember. Maybe one of the reasons I dislike these magicians so much is because... Maybe I've lost my ability to dream. Maybe it's that the magic within my soul doesn't exist anymore. I think it's because in 2007, no matter how extreme these tricks are, I'm sorry, illusions. A trick is something a whore does for money. I think no matter how extreme these illusions are, I never in any way feel like they're not going to pull through. I never, it's like a cliffhanger on an old Dynasty
rerun.
So
you're basically just rooting for one of them to die and then your faith will be reinstated.
It's not that.
Well, it's like a NASCAR race.
That's exactly what I'm saying. People die at NASCAR. Goddamn right
they
do.
That's why people go.
People die in the space shuttle. People die in all kinds of things. People have died in the NFL. People have been paralyzed. At least there's been a good paralysis that's happened. When is the last time one of these magicians or any big-name magician actually had something go terribly, horribly, catastrophically wrong and they were maimed for life? Nobody can think of it.
No.
When is the last time David Copperfield got so much as a bad paper cut on one of his hands? Doesn't happen. You go back, and Scotty is typing on the screen, Houdini. You go back, there were times when Harry Houdini almost snuffed it. There were a lot of times when that guy very nearly didn't make it. That's a guy who really put his life on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he ended up not dying because of magic. He died because of sort of misadventure. It was an ill-timed punch backstage, blah, blah, blah. Everybody knows that. I don't ever feel like any of these magicians are in real danger. So it just feels like an extravagant, tease. That's what it is. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I think the reason why you don't like David Blaine is because he's a hack.
Well,
guy has no charismatic, he has no charisma on the stage. He's just boring. He doesn't do anything. His tricks are just lame.
I don't know whether he's a hack or not. I mean, in terms of skill, I don't really know enough about magic. But I will say that he does try to pass off boredom as sort of intrigue or like a mysterious sort of, like a spooky vibe. And really, I think he's just kind of dull.
Well, I don't get what the trick is if he's hanging out in a block of ice in Times Square for 3 weeks. Where's the trick? It's like, wow, that's a big deal, you know.
I think I'm going to do a trick where I sit on my sofa for 3 weeks.
I'm going to sit
on the sofa, not move until July 31st.
Personally, I do like Chris Angel because the stuff that he does is just kind of defies possibility, as you could say. But I don't think he's human. I think maybe he's an alien or something.
Now, real quickly, give me if you can. Because I've only seen, I think I saw one of the Mind Freak specials. Give me, if you can, what is one of the tricks that Chris Angel has done that you saw and you said, that's just unfreaking believable. How did he do that?
They did it where he was leaving the stage in Vegas after he had just got done doing a show. And this guy came up, shake his hand, and he kind of started brushing him away like, you know, I'm kind of tired or whatever. And then his hand threw the guy's chest and out the back of his shirt. And he picked him up, so his hand is sticking out to the back of this guy's shirt, even though it's still buttoned up in the front.
Right.
And it looks like he literally put his arm through the guy's body.
All right. Well, maybe I'll give it another chance. Does Chris Angel, in your opinion, does he have like showmanship? Is there some style there?
Yeah, definitely. Like he has another skit where he did. He walked up some guy walking through a hotel or something like that, and he just walked up to him and he bit a button off of his T-shirt or off of his button-up. And then he spits it back into place and it works.
Okay, that's pretty great. And he's, isn't he banging somebody famous too? Like Gwyneth Paltrow or somebody?
I haven't heard about that, but it wouldn't surprise me.
All right, excellent. Thank you, sir.
Yep.
All right, there you go. Let's see here. We've got, maybe it's not him, maybe it's Cameron Diaz. There's somebody, some blonde chick. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey, just was going to say that Roy had it go wrong for him, didn't he?
Okay, that's true. I don't really know if they count as magicians, but I'll accept. The judges will accept Roy. The judges will accept Roy Horn as an answer. Thank you. All right, good tiger. All right. We have Jared news, but yes. Okay, watch my face disappear. Thank you, Scotty.
And now for my next trick, I will make our nightly engagement vanish forever.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
So I guess we're done with Chris Angel?
I don't know. Do you have more sound from him?
I don't think so, no.
All right. Somebody sent me the video of this bird that makes the chainsaw noise. I'm not sure if it's actually gonna. Well, let's see here.
All right.
All right. Let's see. This is
that's better than anything I have.
It is fantastic. If it's the same clip that I've seen. Hold on a second. Let's see if this will. Let's see. I'll hit the play button. We'll see if this will actually play. And now for my next trick, Windows Media Player will function correctly.
You need a Mac. To function correctly.
I really do. That's the sad. That's. All right, so this is the bird. I guess it's called a lyre bird, L-I-R-E, I guess is what it's called. But it's this bird that makes the sound of, like, all of this weird crap, including, like, inanimate objects.
Oh.
So it's mimicking.
There's a space in the forest to serve as his concert platform.
This is gripping.
Yeah.
I listened to this cool radio show where they play bird sounds. I just want to hear it make the chainsaw noise.
To persuade females to come close and admire his plumes, he sings the most complex song he can manage. And he does that by copying the songs of all the other birds he hears around him.
When I'm playing this,
the kookaburra.
I'm just hearing that, Tim. I'm just hearing that Donna Mike promo I have been.
I'm going to go into this cave.
Very convincing impersonation. Even the original is fooled.
Isn't that... Okay, now that's not even a bird sound. Isn't that like a monkey sound or something? I don't even know what the hell.
I had an air check of somebody doing a monkey sound once.
Was her name Babs?
It was Babs.
Barb? All right, as soon as he makes the chainsaw sound, we'll be done with playing the bird noise. Oh, he does a camera, too, at some point.
He can imitate the calls of at least 20 different species. He also, in his attempt to outsing his rivals, incorporates other sounds that he hears in the forest. That was a camera shutter. And again. And now a camera with a motor drive.
Isn't that creepy?
Yeah.
And that's a power alarm.
Okay, if you were in the forest, by the way, and you came up and a bird started doing a car alarm and a camera goddamn shutter at you, I mean, that would just freak you out. Here comes the best one. Here's the money shot.
And now the sounds of foresters and their chainsaws working nearby.
Okay, that's just unnerving. I can't think about that too much because it just freaks me out.
Now you gotta buy one of those things.
It's one of those birds?
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like a lyre bird. I'd like a liger, please. Hi, Jeff, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Yeah, Rick. Hey, I got another reason.
We're going to put that in our HD channel. Yes, the HD channel is just going to be the lyre bird singing like a chainsaw on a car alarm.
You should definitely do that. So, hello?
Yes, hi.
Hey, Jared from Subway, when I was working out in Tannisport, you might get a kick out of this.
He came there.
There's a Subway next door to the Kinko's I was working at, and Jared, I guess, came in to christen the new salmon sub from Subway, and the new showed up and everything, and I went in there not knowing that Jared was going to be there, and there's all these people that I swear they're from the backwoods of Gresham or something, I don't know, like hillbillies almost.
That's
like, yeah, yeah, we're here to see Jared from Subway. And, I mean, this guy is like a celebrity amongst really strange circles, so I thought you'd get a kick out of his.
Now, did you get to meet him? Were you there?
No, I came after he'd already been there.
Oh,
all these people have were had driven great distances to see Jared, and they missed him. They were pretty bummed out. So.
Fantastic.
I was happy I missed him, though.
I'm glad. Glad
I share your hatred.
Excellent. Thank you. Now, do you know why you hate Jared from Subway?
You know, I think it's just one of those unexplainable just things, you know. Just I can't really put my finger on it, but I just definitely am not a fan.
That's what I'm saying. It's an inexplicable, disproportionate hatred of somebody who's never done anything to you.
Absolutely.
That's really what this show is about. That's really what our entire program is founded on, you know.
And just knowing that he goes around christening salmon subs or whatever the hell the new sub from Subway is just makes me hate him even more.
The salmon sub. All right, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
All right, there you go. Fantastic. All right, we'll take a break here. We'll come back after this. What's ahead, you might ask? Well, it's Amanda Moyer from CNN Radio who will be joining us from Atlanta to talk about Paris Hilton's first day in jail. Ahead, more news from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth.
We're going to hear about the lightning strikes.
We're
more on lightning over on the west side. A tree exploded.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's a tease. I'm not telling you about it now. You have to listen later.
All that's coming up. Plus, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. More of Scotty J, Sarah Dillon, your phone calls, all that. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio. Don't go anywhere.
You do it, Michael. Magician never reveals his. I sunk it. I sunk the yacht. At least I think I sunk it. I mean, I blew it up, and I don't see it anywhere. Oh God, my heart was in my throat when that curtain came down, and I'm like,
you sank the yacht?
You sunk a $700,000 yacht?
$900,000 worth of insurance on it,
and got rid of the evidence.
What a good job.
Illusion. It's the Rick Emerson Show. 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. Isn't that guy in some other movie that's out now?
Yeah, he did one a few months ago.
He was in that to prison movie or whatever. But
yeah.
He's in some other movie that's out now. Who is Michael Cera? Who's the guy? Is it Michael Cera? Is he Buster or is he George Michael?
That's George Michael.
Okay, because he's in Knocked Up, which I'm like the only person in America that didn't see that this weekend. Did you see it?
No, I wish.
Okay,
I've heard nothing but nothing.
Everybody.
Told me it was better than Anchorman and 4-Year-Old Virgin, and that seems impossible to me, so I need to see it.
Judd Apatow, baby. He's genius. Dennis Miller kept going on and on about this morning, so I didn't get a chance to watch it this way. I was busy fighting with my wife. It's 503-733-2970. Well, what are you going to do? It's 503-733-2970. So that was a lot of fun. Especially when she decided to start the fight after drinking a bunch of kamikazes with your friend at the bar. Thanks for that.
I didn't want to take shots, and Tuggy wanted to buy them for somebody, so I gave them to Lara.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry about that.
I appreciate that.
But my therapist thanks you. The fight was still continuing for 2 days? That's a doozy.
I don't want to talk about it. It's 503-7. We'll talk about it later. I don't want to talk about it, and yet, of course, we will. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta. Will you please welcome the one, the only, the soon-to-be legendary Amanda Moyer. Why, hello, Amanda. How are you?
Hello. How are you guys today?
We are dandy. Sister, how's life in Atlanta? No, Atlanta's not the Big Easy. That's New Orleans, right?
That's correct.
What is Atlanta? If you don't give me a better...
I don't think it's really anything in particular.
Oh,
you call it Atlanta because of the weather and...
You got to have hometown.
The Peach State.
You got to have hometown pride, Amanda. Amanda Atlanta. Hey, that's a great name. You know, if you were a wacky morning DJ in our music station, you would call yourself Amanda Atlanta, and people would think it was witty. Well, I'll think of an appropriate nickname for you, because I don't know that I can, in all seriousness, say Hotlanta. So I'll have to come up with something else. And let's talk about Paris Hilton. So she went to jail on Sunday, even though it was originally supposed to be today. Yeah, wasn't it supposed to be this morning?
Right. The deadline was June 5th, but she shocked everybody and went a little bit early. She was at the MTV Movie Awards, walking the red carpet and talking to reporters, and then the next thing you know, she's checking herself into the L.A. County Jail.
Now, was this to beat the news cycle?
Pretty much, and also paparazzi's been camped out at the jail, and there's just been such a buzz about this. I think she just wanted to get through it, get over it, and start the sentence.
Is she, now we have conflicting reports, I say, as though it's like a breaking story in the Mideast or something, but I have read differing accounts of this. I'm unclear about whether she has a cellmate or not. Do we know?
I was told she does not have a cellmate. Originally, she was supposed to have a cellmate, but I don't know if it was for security or what other reasons, but she doesn't have a cellmate. She is by herself. She's supposed to be there for about 23 days now because she's going to most likely get out with good behavior. That's down from the 45 days that she was originally sentenced. And basically she's got 1 hour of freedom per day to take a shower, watch TV, use the phone. And she's basically just in there by herself. I do know that for breakfast this morning, which was her first meal, she had cereal, juice, and bread.
Is it white bread? Do you know?
I don't know.
I know that sounds like a silly question, but these are the things I wonder about. Because you do, because there are, it seems like there are only two schools of thought. There's one school of thought that says that going to jail sucks and it's terrible, it's an awful experience. And then there's the school of thought that, like, my in-laws and most Republicans seem to have, which is that jail is some sort of a country club relaxation place. And so those are the, I always do wonder, like, when you go to jail, like, do you get, on the one hand, because you're punished, do you get bad food? Or, on the other hand, because you are a ward of the state and they are therefore tasked with taking care of you, do you then get a high quality of food? I mean, that sounds like a real small thing, but that's one of those things I've always wondered about. And not having ever... the only time I was ever in jail was just long... I mean, it wasn't for long enough that they had to feed me for anything. So, I mean, I always wonder if it's like the military where you just get crap, or if it's, you know, or if you are actually treated sort of decently. And are they taking extraordinary measures to make sure that she doesn't get photographed while she's in there?
Yeah, and she's also being held in a special unit for celebrities and other high-profile people and police officers. And so she's not in with the general public either. I mean, she's off in her own little segregated area. So, I mean, to her, this is not be getting good. For someone who's talking on the phone all the time and carrying her little dog around and doing whatever she does, you know, this 1 hour per day that she gets to take a shower and do stuff, I mean, it's going to seem bad to her. And the food probably is going to be quite bad as well, not anything what she's used to getting. But it doesn't seem like it's as bad as it would be if you or I or someone else went to jail.
Okay, I'm going to ask you what sounds like the most trivial, vapid, pointless question. This question, the fact that we are actually having this discussion, by the way, I think is emblematic of why they hate us, because I know that there's all kinds of upheaval, starvation, famine, there's plagues happening, there's Mideast strife, and I'm sitting here going on and on about how Paris Hilton's going to be treated in a jail somewhere. But here's a dumb question. I'm an idiot guy, so I don't know this. Because I know that they won't let her have hair extensions. So here's my question. When she goes to jail, so I guess she has to take those out or whatever while she's being processed. Here's a dumb question. When she leaves, do they give those back to her, or is she just going to walk out of jail with, like, no hair?
Well, I assume they're going to give everything back to her that she handed in when she was booked. I'm sure she had jewelry on as well and all kinds of stuff that in her purse that she wasn't allowed to have. So I'm sure, just like anyone else, they'll give it back to her. I know she... was issued the orange top and orange pants and had to turn in her fancy Gucci clothes.
Because here's the thing is, we may not have known when she was going to jail and how she was going to get there, but we know what door she's going to be coming out of. And like all Americans, all I want out of this, all that I ask for in exchange for paying like 25% of my paycheck and the taxes or whatever it is, I just want at least one picture of Paris Hilton looking grubby and sad and defeated. That's all. That's all I ask for. Not a lot. I'm not asking for world peace. I'm not asking for Santa to give me double my toys this year. I just want one shot of Paris Hilton looking as though she's had a bad couple of days. That's all.
You would notice that from her mugshot. She was pretty good in it.
Was she doing the Tom DeLay in the mugshot? Was the big, beaming, toothy, I'm not really going to jail smile?
And she had eye makeup on, and her hair was all put to the side. I mean, she looked good in her mugshot. So we'll have to see what she looks like when she comes out. I think she's due out June 26th.
All right. Thank you. Amanda Moyer, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. Amanda Moyer at the CNN Radio Center in Atlanta. Fantastic. Yeah, she doesn't like me. Well, what are you going to do? It's 503.
She likes you.
I don't think she does. Well, here's the thing. I think Amanda Moyer.
Rachel McGrath really doesn't like you. Amanda Moyer thinks that I'm impartial.
Yeah, but she's a foreigner. The thing about Amanda Moyer, I'm not saying Amanda Moyer doesn't like me personally, Rick Emerson, because I have no way of knowing that. I don't think she cares for our type of radio program. I'll say that. I don't think she. I think she views us as being unprofessional. But that's okay. What are you going to do? Hey, we'll get a couple of these calls. All of the stuff to do. We got to talk about Ozzy. Hey, hold on. Let me hit the cough button. Well done.
My mic's still on.
Yes, it is. let me see. We'll do these calls. We got Peter Carlin coming up later on. We'll talk to Scotty J. More from Tim Riley. Am I done with the CNN things? Yes, I'll put that in the done pile. The done pile, which has a whopping two things in it right now. We got to talk about Body World 3, because by the end of today, we really have to do some auditions to be Tim Riley for a day and a half. So, Scotty, what we're going to do is this. We will finish this segment. I'll clear out these calls. We'll break. We'll come back probably with Tim at the bottom of the hour. And then here in a few, not right now, but like in a few minutes, probably 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 minutes, we will do the next round of auditions to be Tim Riley for a day and a half. And what that requires is for you to call up and read a 30-second news story of your choosing. Now, it shouldn't be a made-up story. Shouldn't be something you wrote yourself. It should be a real news story you found somewhere. And you are not reading it as Tim Riley. This is not an impersonate Tim Riley thing. You read it in your own style. And we will choose the person whose news story skills are the best. That person will accompany us to OMSI Body World 3 special press screening Wednesday morning, a special press tour, Body World 3 Wednesday morning at OMSI. So you got to be free at like 8 o'clock on Wednesday morning, too. And if you don't entirely blow, we will have you in on Friday during the noon news hour to do a few stories as well. So coming up later on this hour, we'll take probably, I don't know, a bank of calls or so to see who might fill in for Tim Riley Wednesday. So be ready to read a 30-second news story later on this hour. So be listening for that. We'll do a couple of these calls here. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
Hey, I've actually met Jared. My sister and I were up at Pike's Market up in Seattle.
Uh-huh.
And he happened to walk into the restaurant we were at, and my sister, like a total doofus, you know, yells out, "Hey, it's Jarrett!" And I was kind of disinterested in it, but my sister's kind of the attractive type. But Jarrett is freakishly tall. I mean, because they always put him with bigger people, I guess.
Right.
He's like 6'8", 6'9", just freakishly tall guy. But he actually, and this was already after he, you know, was married and doing the commercials with his wife. He saw my sister and immediately started hitting on her. You know, which was
weird. I mean, I guess that's simultaneously creepy and flattering.
And what's funny is there was a couple of people with him, his two-man, I guess, Subway entourage.
His Subway posse.
But, God, this was the most pompous ass. I mean, this guy thought he was Rockefeller and, you know, like Burt Reynolds rolled up in the one. And he was just this pompous ass. So if you never had a real reason to hate him, just, he is all that you think he is, and more so.
Fantastic. And, you know, I mean, look, I don't begrudge anybody who can make a living, especially if it's by doing not a whole lot of work. I mean, I'm the king of making, I pay my rent without really actually having to lift a finger, you know, compared to most people. But, I mean, that guy's skills consisted of getting fat and then cutting back his diet somewhat slightly. I mean, that really is it. I mean, that he is the most American of success stories, I think, in a very real way. All right. Thank you, sir. All right, let's see. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Yeah, Rick. As far as Paris's hair extensions go, they'd probably take those away from her. She'll get them back in a little bag when she goes to leave.
Now, here's a question that this actually ties in with an email I just got. This says, Rick, maybe you or Sarah will know the answer to this, but I'm unclear about how hair extensions are removed. Aren't they physically tied to your existing hair? Can anyone just take them out, or do you need to have a hairdresser who knows what they're doing? Or would they even have someone like that in prison, or do you have to cut them out? signed Why Do I Care About This At All? I don't know, but as dumb as it sounds, really as gay as this makes me sound, I really am fascinated by the idea of Paris's hair extensions and how you get them off her head.
It depends. You can either have them tied to your hair or you can have them glued on.
Because is that like a weave?
Yeah.
Which is like, a weave is again, woven in, obviously, right?
That's what Britney Spears has right now. You've seen the new pictures of her.
She has a weave?
She has, she has hair extensions that are tied onto her existing hair. They're like little knots. So her hair looks really bad. It looks like basically she went to Mexico and had it braided. Except for it's unbraided and it's just like bald at the top.
Fantastic.
As a former corrections officer, I can say these ones that like the cheap ones that you can get at the mall with like clip in or attach.
Right.
Those, you know, go right in the right little box of your belongings. And Paris is going to have a real fun time with the prison issue underwear.
Well, yeah, because she gets, I think she gets two pair of panties a week. That's the thing, is underwear. They give her two pair a week.
And just imagine all of the human refuse that has wore those.
Oh, that's right, because they're probably not brand new.
Oh, no.
They're underwear that have been washed.
They're
by, you know,
recycled
like,
until they about fall apart.
And I mean, here's a question. When you're in like an average jail, let's say this is the Linwood jail, and I don't really know if that's an upper class jail or, I mean, it sounds like it's just a run of the mill, regular old LA jail. Do they air condition or, I mean, do they temperature control those at all?
It depends on, you know, I've worked in facilities that have been air conditioned and some that have not. Imagine in California they would be, but they're still, it's not going to be a nice 68 degrees. They're not going to waste a lot of money on it. They're going to, you know, it's going to be kind of warm and, I tell you, if you've ever been in a jail, you'll never forget the smell. That's all I have to say.
Well, and again, I was only in one for like 6 hours. I don't remember the smell so much as I remember just that everything in there felt sort of damp and just sort of like a theater floor, you know, just a general sort of scum layer on everything that you couldn't quite, you could tell would never wash away ever.
No, I mean, there's... You know, if they ever, I mean, jails are just, as far as I'm from, the dirtiest place. You know, the only thing that comes close to it is a hospital.
I remember sitting on this sort of mat, this sort of like little thin mattress roll thing in this cell, and my whole thing was not to let any part of my exposed skin touch anything in the jail cell. That was my whole deal. Just sitting there trying not to let my hand, the back of my neck, you know, my fingers, don't want anything touching any exposed surface, because you could tell they never cleaned it. And then I don't mean to gross everybody out, but I remember just sitting in there, and the toilet in this jail cell where I was being held, it was a large communal, like a tank, a large communal cell, like a holding cell. It was me and like 5, 6, 7, 8 other guys, and there was a toilet in the corner that wasn't really, you know, there wasn't really no privacy. There was like a little half wall that maybe was about 3 feet high. But I mean, and there was a guy over there like, you know, doing his business. And I mean, you didn't want to be there with your pants down sitting doing your business with a bunch of other dudes around. And so that everybody who did their business would do it and then get up and, like, pull up their pants and be done as quickly as possible, which means that hygiene, if you know what I mean, was not necessarily job one.
You know, and that half wall, that's pretty luxurious for most places. I remember I hated doing rounds. You'd be walking by a cell, you'd look in and hear some guy dropping a deuce, you know.
Okay, we're done. Thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
All right, one more and then we'll take a break. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to comment in on David Blaine and Paris Hilton being in jail.
Yes.
As far as her being in jail, I don't know where she's at, but I know here in Portland, Inverness Jail has an awesome breakfast. They got pancakes and eggs and all that.
Now, is that only if you're in like the dining hall, the mess hall? What if you're confined to your cell?
No, I was actually, it's been just a weekend in there, you know, it was kind of lame, you know, DUI like 15 years ago.
But really, pancakes is not bad. You can't complain about
little
that.
Little silver dollar pancakes and eggs and milk and a biscuit and all that. And
excellent.
It was nice.
So it's like your own personal Izzy's buffet.
You didn't get second.
All right. All right. Excellent.
But David Blaine, he's an awesome street performer. Excuse me. But trying to be Houdini and stuff like that, he's really lame.
I will say this.
Here's the thing about magic. This is my final observation about this, and we got to move on to some other stuff. But you're right about this. The up-close street magic he does, where, like, he'll put his hand over your watch, and then he takes it away, and your watch says, like, a different time. That's pretty cool. Just like our friend Adam the Great, who I will run into every now and again out in public, and he'll do this. You know, he'll do really freaky stuff. Like, he'll just be having a conversation with you, and then you look up, and he's got your watch in his back pocket or something. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
The thing where a guy's, like, going to make a Cadillac disappear, or, you know, he's going to put an elephant on top of the Empire State Building, in a weird way, the bigger the trick is, the less it impresses me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's all TV magic, David Copperfield.
Exactly what I'm...
to make the move to your new home. It's good to know Service Credit Union moves with...
All right, thank you, sir. Yes, we... Was that from K2?
It may have been.
Yes, thank you. All right, we need to take a break here. We'll come back around the corner. Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. We'll find out what's going on in your world. Also, if you would like to audition for your chance to be Tim Riley for a day and a half, and the big upshot there is you get to see Body World 3 at OMSI Wednesday, along with Sarah Dillon, Scotty J, and myself. This is now the time to be calling. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Pleased to have a 30-second news selection ready to read in a manner of your choosing. 503-733-2970. Back after this, the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Why? Hello. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Rick, just listening now to the second half of the first hour, and holy crap. The show sounds completely different. Is somebody listening to our new stream? Hello to those listening to the stream. It's 970.am, by the way. We're calling it the Almost Live Stream. It starts about 40 minutes after the show begins. So, show goes on at 11. Around 11:30, 11:35 or so, the stream gets kicked up there. So, he says, it's so clear you don't even sound the same. Thanks for the Almost Live feed. I hope the real-time feed comes soon. Having been able to listen to live at my old jobs, the hour delay was good, but... the day delay was good, but to be able to listen now would be the blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so there you go. So if you want to be listening to us there, you can go to 970.am for the AM 970 Almost Live Stream. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Okay, so a lot of people were asking about that big, what they thought was an explosion. Over the west side this morning.
A big explosion.
It was thunder, which was accompanied by lightning, which apparently damaged at least three Aloha homes. This after a lightning strike caused a big tree to explode. It was a huge Douglas fir. This all happened around 8:15 this morning. And the house is in the 20,000 block of Southwest Anna Court. A bolt hit the 110-foot Douglas fir, causing it to splinter into several sections. And a 45-foot section of the massive tree fell on a home on Gracie Street. Two other homes were also damaged by the falling tree. And one person reported a medical problem right after the lightning bolt. As anybody would. At least have to change your undergarments after that much noise.
So this is, and apparently it was pretty, I mean, we were...
It was loud.
I mean, we, and by that I mean me. I was making fun of it earlier because it was just, what time was this?
It was about 8:15.
8:15. Well, you know, I actually heard that, I think. Because that was, I think that might have been when I was driving out to Tigard. Would I have heard that?
Sure, if you were listening.
I guess. Well, who knows? Well, whatever.
It was loud thunder, accompanied by rain.
And it destroyed a tree.
An entire tree.
Which is pretty great, actually. So
we have a shortage of trees, so we have to stop that.
Wait, just don't even know how to talk anymore. Is the tree the thing you're supposed to take refuge under, or are you not supposed to take refuge? What are you supposed to do when you're out there and there's lightning? Are you supposed to get underneath the tree or not?
But go underneath the tree unless it's the only tree standing there. Because it's going to be hit.
So if there's more than one tree, you should stand under a tree.
Yes.
But if there's only one tree, you should stand out in a field or out in the middle of nowhere?
If you're in Kansas, I mean in Oregon, it'd be hard not to find several trees within walking
distance. I'm so unclear about what to do. Lightning's going to kill me, clearly. I don't even know.
Most places I've been to have numerous trees.
So, wait, so this is like that thing about where you're supposed to go in your house if there's an earthquake. Is that a doorway?
Yes.
Okay. So let's say I'm in a field. There are two trees, and the rest is open field, and lightning
What are you
starts.
Doing in the field? In the middle of a field. I mean, you have to be way out of town.
My My father, Kal-El, has just sent me there in a small crystal bassinet.
Yeah.
If I'm in a field and there are two trees, and then lightning begins to hit, what should I do? Should I stand in one of the trees or stay in the open field?
No, stand under the trees.
Under one of them?
One of them.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is that going to keep me safe?
I mean, what are the chances of this happening?
I don't know. Well, let's move on.
These look like older tract homes anyway. So.
I've exhausted all the potential there. I don't even really know where I was going with that.
I don't either.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about something entirely different. It's not too late to get that beach-ready body, you know. That, according to celebrity fitness expert and trainer and author of the Body Express Makeover, Michael George, he says even if you have yet to hit the gym this season, a lot can be accomplished by the 4th of July.
Anything's possible. You know, you can really make a lot of change in your body in very little time. 4 to 6 weeks is plenty of time to really, you know, get a head start on sculpting and toning and shaping your body.
The whole notion of body sculpting is a weird term. That term kind of freaks me out a little bit. I don't know why.
He's been hired by Tobey Maguire for Spider-Man 3.
Really?
Yeah. But you get your body ready, you got to be willing to make some changes.
It is a change, and you want to make exercising daily and eating properly a lifestyle. So you want to make a commitment to be consistent.
Here's the rest of the sentence.
And something else.
I guess you got to read the book.
How ironic, by the way, that he was cut off after saying he wanted to be consistent.
Maybe he was hit by lightning.
Suddenly stopped. Thank you. Good callback. I didn't bicycle today, as you know, you bastards, but I have been bicycling pretty regularly recently, more often than not. But you know what? I just can't. You know, the thing is, I just can't bring myself to modify my diet. And so the great thing about exercising, though, is it lets you just completely eat like a pig and just be guilt-free and a little uppity about it, too.
Mm.
Like, you know what? Somebody gives you the stink eye for sitting there and just eating, you know, eating a fistful of those ice cream dip things. You just give them the big middle finger and gesture, you know, jerk a thumb over your shoulder and point at the bicycle. So there you go. I bicycle. What did you do? I'm just continuing to shovel snack chips into my mouth this weekend. So it was good times.
Why not eat 5 or 6 meals a day in order to get your body ready?
Done.
Like a car engine. You fuel the car engine with gasoline. When it's almost empty, you fill it up. Well, that's the way the body wants to be fueled. It wants to be fueled every 2.5-3 hours. If you wait long periods of time, you're ravenous by the time you eat, and so you tend to eat more.
5 or 6 times a day. Yeah. I would say that the Miles Around guys are already, they're way ahead of us on this. They're trailblazers. Try to eat 4 or 5 times just during that show alone while hovering.
First hour, at least.
While hovering over Tim's keyboard. Fantastic. I love the idea that it was not just crumbs that the guy saw falling into your keyboard, but chocolate crumbs.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think that those guys. You wouldn't think that those guys would let chocolate crumbs get away.
I mean, how could anybody possibly not eat in a 2-hour period?
It doesn't look like they've let a lot of chocolate crumbs get past them in their lives, though. So, Rick, I heard that tree explode this morning. I live in Alloa. It woke me up and made my dad wet his bed.
Yeah, I told you that would happen.
True story. Mm-hmm. He says the safest thing to do in a lightning storm is get into a car and wait it out. All right, there you go.
So bring that car in the middle of the field so it's ready for the lightning storm.
Have it with you. Have it with you always. Drive everywhere.
Mm.
Let's see, blah, blah, blah. The safest place to be during a thunderstorm is preferably a building with a lightning rod.
Mm. Now, when's the last time you've seen a lightning rod? Outside of some old barn in New England.
I don't even really know what a lightning rod looks like, actually.
Oh, I've seen them on barns.
Is that one of those things that looks like a rooster?
Yeah. No, that's a weather vane.
What does a lightning rod look like?
A rod. The rooster is a weather vane.
Right.
But you could put a lightning rod on top of the rooster.
What if the rooster's made of metal? Does that work as a lightning rod? Is a lightning rod anything that's metal?
Yes, I would suppose so.
So if I just had like a tin can on top of the roof, that would work? Why am I talking about this? No, it doesn't matter. Never going to affect me. Susan Reynolds weighs in. Never ever stand under a tree. There's an implied sort of idiot in there. If it's hit by lightning, you're a goner. The safest place to be is in your car. As you know, I grew up in Chicago, and we were always told never to stand under a tree. If you're standing out in a field, then I'm very sorry for you.
How about a root cellar? Don't they have those in the Midwest?
Seriously. Stand in a vault underneath a hotel.
With the pickles and the jams and the jellies.
And Norman Bates' mother.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, there's a variety of exercise to get your body in shape for the 4th of July.
A lot of people get bored because they go to the gym or they do the same activities over and over and over again.
It's got
to
stop.
You want to make sure you get variety
in the gym now.
You don't get bored. You want to make the process of exercising
engaging and fun and exciting.
Start having fun now.
It's not going to work. Exercise is not... Look, here's the thing. I'm not going to lie to you like everybody. Kids, if you're listening to me now, are kids out of school yet? Or are they all home with explosive diarrhea? Kids, if you're listening to me now, I'm going to tell you this right now. There's a couple things that adults will never tell you the truth about, but that I, because I have no motive. And as a parent, you have to lie. As I am not a parent, I can, you know, I have no motive to lie. I can just be completely honest with you. Smoking is bad for you, but it looks really cool. Drugs are bad for you, but they're the best thing that ever happened to music. And I will also tell you this. Exercise, good for you, but goddamn, it sucks. It sucks. It never quits sucking. Exercise is excruciating. It's dull. It's painful. It's irritating. It makes you sweaty. Makes you look completely unattractive while you're doing it. There's nothing enjoyable about it. It's tedious, laborious, and it's an excruciating, agonizing experience. That being said, you feel better when it's done. So there you go. This idea somehow that they peddle to kids when they're in school that, well, you know, once you start exercising, you're going to find that you enjoy it a lot. And exercising is a really great feeling. That's a lie. Unless your exercise consists of having sex with a Swedish bikini team like 15 times a day, exercise is not enjoyable at all in any way. Doesn't mean it's not good for you. You should do it anyway. So there you go. Rick Emerson is not a role model. Here's Tim Riley.
And the other lie is, upon graduating from college, you're going to get a high-paying job. Why, those student loans will be paid off within 6 months.
Not, what did that Dr. Phil commercial say? Not going to happen. All right. Let's do one more, and then we'll, hey, do you want to be in here while we hear these prospective Tim Riley's audition?
Oh, would I? Of course.
I don't even know if you're being serious.
I don't know if I am.
Let's do one more.
Well, let's stop by and talk to your old pal, Dr. Death. Jack Krikorian giving his first public comments after being released from prison. He was on 60 Minutes. The man once claimed to have helped over 100 people end their lives. Said if somebody wanted his help now, he would just have to turn them away.
Well, it would be painful for me, but I'd have to refuse him because I gave my word.
So check the Yellow Pages.
I'm creepy. I'm really unnerving.
He does not regret helping others.
That's like asking a veterinarian, do you regret helping that person's animal? You know.
He'd gladly help your animals, but he can't.
Well, there you go. Thanks so much. All right. So as you know, let me read this correctly, make sure I'm getting all the facts right. Let's see. So this week, we are auditioning listeners. I'm reading this directly off the page. Huh? Auditioning listeners who would like to fill in for Tim at the press preview of Body Worlds 3 in OMSI. That is Wednesday or Wednesday, as they say, at 8 a.m. Listeners will display their news reporting skills, and by Friday, June 1st, No. That clearly didn't happen. pardon me. The show will determine the winner. The person will accompany Rick, Sarah, and Scotty J to the press preview Wednesday at 8 a.m., and they will report on it during the noon news hour that same day. So that person will call in and tell us how it was. Depending on how good you are, you may or may not come back on Friday and do some stories during the noon news hour because Tim is going to be gone Friday. So
yes.
The immediate prize, though, is the winner will get to go to the OMSI Body Worlds 3 special press preview, which means that there's going to be no riffraff, no rabble. It'll just be press folks touring it, and then I think there's some food and there's some whatnot. And so you don't have to be around a bunch of grubby-faced, sticky, screaming goddamn children. That's basically the upshot of it. So to audition for this, what you will now do is to read a 30-second news story. You are not doing a Tim impersonation. You are reading this as yourself. And then at some point, I don't know, by the end of today's show, hopefully, we will determine the winner. Let me find my grading sheet that we were using. We had determined... Where did the hell
Oh, I lost
this?
Mine. No, oh, it's over here somewhere. Do you have it?
Oh, no, I don't have yours. Did you lose yours?
Nope, I remember.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
No.
Okay. Well...
I have it somewhere over here.
Well, okay. Okay. Without further ado, let's go to the phones, and then Sarah and I will be grading each of these on a classic 1 to 10 scale. We will not be revealing those grades on the air, but that's how we'll be doing it. Hello, sir. Who's this?
This is Ken.
Hi, Ken. How you doing today?
Doing great, Rick.
All right, Ken. First of all, if you are selected, are you able to go to the OMSI Body Worlds 3 tour Wednesday at 8 a.m.?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. All right, sir. Do a news story of your choosing. Try to keep it at around 30 seconds, if you would. Go ahead. Start anytime you're ready.
All right, thanks, Rick. With a dog-eat-dog world in London last week where a British artist and Yoko Ono ate chunks of a corgi dog, the breed favored by Queen Elizabeth II, to protest the royal family's treatment of a fox during a fox hunt. It was pretty disgusting, McGowan said, which he, of the meal, which he ate while appearing on a London radio station Tuesday. He said, I've never tasted anything like it. It was great and had a very funny smell. It was horrible. That's all for me. Back to you, Rick.
I like any story that contains Yoko Ono. All right, excellent. Yoko, I'm just writing these down so we keep track of Yoko Ono, dog eat dog world. All right. Excellent. All right, and has Scotty J gotten your information, sir?
Yes, he has.
All right, Ken, thank you so much, sir. Thank you for audition.
Thank you.
All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. That's Ken. There you go. Okay, Sarah and I are making notes here.
Okay.
It sounded right. Fairly realistic because he did have a couple of stumbles.
It did. No, there was that guy last week. I forget who it was. One of the guys that couldn't have pronounced anything right to save his life. All right. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
This is Deacon.
Deacon. That's a cool name. Is that spelled like it sounds? D-E-A-C-O-N?
D-E-K-E-N.
D-E-K-E-N. So yep. It looks like Deacon, but is that a foreign name?
No, it's actually from a Steely Dan song.
Oh,
Deacon Blues.
I won't hold. Really?
Yep. Colby Deacon. Oh, it's been played over and over and over again.
I try to avoid. As soon as the guy says Steely, here's Steely Dan, I never get by. That's like some of those Cleveland Clinic clips that cut off. That was a little alliteration for me. As soon as the guy says Steely Dan, that's like a test. It's a reflex test of how fast my hand can get to the dial. All right. So your parents named you for a Steely Dan song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't pick it out, but it's working so far.
Do you like Steely Dan?
You know, I'd rather not listen to him, but...
Okay, good for you, sir.
As the namesake, I kind of have to, you know, put up with it.
Yes, it's required. Well, at least they didn't name you, like, Peg or Asia or something. All right,
Moonbeam.
Totally. All right, start the story whenever you like, sir. Read a story of your choosing in your own style, and begin whenever the mood strikes you.
Sounds great. All right, for the second time in 2 years, someone is poisoning dogs in Regina. Police are searching for answers, but with no suspect, pet owners have decided to steer clear of Regina's best-known park. In recent weeks, the animals, 9 of which have been poisoned from pills apparently laced with a heavy-duty pesticide, have been checked into local veterinary clinics. One dog has died. How sad. Most of the animals have become ill after spending time in the Wascana Center, the city's largest park area. The pesticide is an explosive agricultural product called Furadan. Park authorities say the pesticide, it is not a chemical they use on the park grounds. It can kill animals or small children within an hour. So have fun at the park.
Now you end on a nihilistic note there.
Yeah. Is that story from a Canada story?
Yes, sir.
That would be pronounced Regina.
Well,
the city. They have a sporting team. All right. So
you can say that because it's a city.
Regina. And I saw her Regina. All right.
That's only one wrong.
Right there. Okay, but how ironic that you're correcting someone at a pronunciation. Mine is like all bad dog news day. All right. Let's see. It's a dog news afternoon. Okay, I'm making a note to myself.
All right, I did the same.
Deacon Canada dog poison.
I wanted to see if there might be any bonus points awarded because I also am a reverend.
Are you?
This is true.
In what church, sir?
Universal life, man.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I should have known. All right, thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
That's Deacon. All right, here we go. Do a couple more here. And we'll try to squeeze him in next hour as well. Hey, Scotty, we confirmed with Peter Carlin. Is he going to be on too? Is that the deal? Okay, excellent. So we'll do a few more of these next hour, and then we'll deduce the winner. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
This is Roy.
Hi, Roy. How you doing?
Good.
All right, sir. At a time of your choosing, please then to be reading us the story.
Victim taunted teen to shooter, Pueblo, Colorado. A judge sentenced a 17-year-old boy to 20 years in prison for the shooting and killing of a woman who dared him to shoot her after he threatened her with a gun. Adam Montoya pleaded guilty to the shooting death of Barbara Alcon, 30. District Judge David Coral on Tuesday said, I could have sentenced Montoya to 6 years in rehabilitation in the youthful offender system. Instead, sentenced Montoya to adult prison. According to police, Montoya pointed a gun at Alcon, who pushed him and told him not to point it at her. Alcon said, go ahead, if you've got the balls, then do it, daring him to shoot. The arguing continued until Montoya told Alcon, when I take this safety off, you better not push me. Then again, Alcon pushed Montoya and said, go ahead and shoot me. Montoya shot her in the head, killing her instantly. Alcon left behind 3 sons, her oldest, which was among Montoya's best friends.
Well, points for picking our kind of story, I'll say that.
And from Pueblo, Colorado.
Yeah, and from Pueblo, Colorado. That story is great in like 3 different ways.
His mom?
Yes, I believe so. Because the oldest child was one of his best friends. So
exactly
sort
right.
Of a snake eating its tail thing.
Yeah, go ahead and dare him to shoot me.
Yeah, I dare you. Good. You do know that it has the hallmarks of everything we like. That all of the earmarks are there, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, my friend. I don't know the difference between hallmarks and earmarks. I don't really care. That's Roy. Let's do one more here. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
Hey, this is Chad. How we doing, guys?
Hey, Chad. What's up, brother? How you doing?
Pretty good, man. I decided to take the day off. So.
All right. Excellent. Well, are you prepared with a story, sir?
I am, sir.
All right. So read the story in a manner of your own choosing and try to keep it at around 30 seconds.
Will do.
Okay.
Today's top story in the Oregonian, you know those red light cameras you see at intersections? Well, you may be seeing more of them in the near future. The Oregonian Senate is still sponsored by Representative Jeff Barker, a Democrat from Aloha, would lift the limit on the number of intersections the city is allowed to monitor with the cameras. Currently, Portland is allowed 12, it has 5 right now, and Beaverton is allowed 8, and they have 4. Now, the bill is expected to pass, and the governor has said that he will sign whatever they pass. In other news, Lindsay Lohan still in rehab. For AM 970,
on
Radio.
Okay, that's kind of a little George Takei, a little Mr. Sulu laugh there at the end. Excellent. All right, thank you, Chad.
All right, man. There you go.
That was pleasant enough.
That really was. All right, there's a Chad. All right, hold on. I'm making it a red lights plus. Lindsay Lohan. Points for style. All right. All right, Scotty. We'll clear out the phones here, Scotty, and my apologies to those we didn't get to. We'll do at least one more round of this in the next hour. We're going to take a break here. We'll come back. Peter, are we already? Is it 2 o'clock?
Sure is.
Good Lord. It's 2 o'clock. Where does the time go? All right. Jesus, that doesn't even seem possible. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. Peter Carlin, Sopranos Talk, Entourage Talk, more from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth, and at least one more round of auditions to be Tim Riley for a day and a half. You say there's the Rick Emerson Show back after this. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's fun. Where does the time go? And I know I just said that, but seriously, it's 2:10 already. Seems like I just got here. Good Lord. All right, it's 503-733-2970. We really do need a longer show. It's 503-733-2970. Just a moment, we'll talk to Peter Carlin from the Oregonian. Tim Riley coming back at the bottom of the hour. Like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. One more time this hour, a little later on, I'll probably 20, 25, half an hour from now. We'll do another bank of auditions to be Tim Riley for a day and a half. It's your chance to see OMSI Body Worlds 3 free of the sticky-faced rabble. That'll be Wednesday at 8 a.m. and so forth. Don't forget, by the way, we're giving away a pair of tickets every single week to the AM 970 Glorious Bastard of the Week. The only way you can win is if you sign up. It's 970.am, which is the new home of the AM 970 Almost Live stream as well. It's more content than you could possibly imagine. It's 503-733-2970. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show, live from here. I'm sort of doing my CNN intro there, and then I realized he's just important. In Portland. Why, hello, Peter Carlin. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I just mangled my whole introduction to you, and I realized I don't have your... You know, I really keep meaning to replace your I Love Lucy theme music with something else, and I have nothing.
Alrighty.
Wait,
well,
hold on. No, that's not it. I have nothing. Hey, how's life? How are things?
Things are fine, thank you.
And it was a great article you did about the 30th anniversary. 30th anniversary? 40? What is Sergeant Pepper's? Is it 30 or 40?
That would be 40.
Really?
Yep.
God damn, I'm old. Jesus. All right. So let's talk Sopranos last night. And again, this is where I gave everybody the 5-second warning that if you didn't watch last night Sopranos, you don't want to know what happened, you can turn down your radio right now because I'm not holding back. man, what a great episode that was last night. I mean, that is just, and not just because there was a lot of whackings, but just because it was, it just, I think there are a lot of times where it feels like, it feels like nothing happens on that show. And also, I was thinking about this too, there are also times when you've, And maybe this is something you would say is a benefit, but there are times when it feels like you almost forget that you're watching a show that is fundamentally a mob show, that it's fundamentally a show about the mafia.
Yep.
And there's a lot of times when it doesn't feel that way. There's a lot of times like I'm just watching, you know, it's interchangeable with any number of other family-oriented dramas. And I think...
Is that good or bad in your book?
I think that a lot of times it is... It's nothing that I can't see on a lot of other shows, where it's like there's the troubled kid or the husband and wife don't get along or the what's our daughter going to do in college or the whatever.
And you think that that's a bad thing?
I don't think it's a bad thing, but I think it's something that I can see in a lot of other places. I think when The Sopranos, the thing that is that people initially found fascinating about that show and continue to is that it does pull back the curtain on a slice of life, even if it's a fictionalized. They pull back the curtain on something that Americans and I think people find fascinating that you don't typically get to see. It is in a I would compare it to The West Wing. I'm not saying that's exactly how the White House works, but I'm saying it's something that people find interesting, and the chance to go behind the scenes, people find very gripping. Because look, you think of something, The Godfather's the obvious example, where I suppose that it shows the way the mafia works, but it also shows the way that certainly a bygone version of the mafia works, if it was ever really like that at all.
Mm-hmm.
This does... I'm hearing Peter... This is skeptical Peter I'm hearing now. You know, in Goodfellas, although it did show the underside of it, and the dark underside and the underbelly, Goodfellas also had a certain amount of glamour to it. I think the real... hook of The Sopranos is the chance to see the realistic day-to-day operations of a vast criminal enterprise, and I think
that's just the most surface value to the show. I'm actually working on a piece for Sunday, which I've taken a lot of notes for, and I now need to sit and write, traces to what traces what to my mind are the five layers in The Sopranos shows.
Now, can you reveal any of those five layers?
I can reveal two of the five. No, I'll reveal them all.
Okay.
To me, on the surface, it's a mob show. You got your mob drama, the literal story of scheming and dealing and all that stuff.
Right.
Wax and sit downs and little chats. There's that, and then there's the family drama aspect, which I think is also really interesting, because you're getting into, you know, both the, you know, your mob, you know, getting into the literal genealogical family behind the mob family.
Right.
Then you got your social metaphor level, where the way that the Sopranos sort of mob biz kind of echoes or reflects sort of larger political and cultural events, which always happens, which I think is fabulous. You know, they're sort of like shadowy, schemey, duplicitous ways,
sure,
often evoke and echo things that are going on in the so-called, you know, stand-up world. And then you have this kind of personal metaphor, Tony sort of as a kind of everyman. This, you know, he's like every middle class or upper middle class, you know, middle-aged father, except for the fact, you know, who all of whom, you know, make various moral compromises,
right,
ethical compromises, just to get to the end of the day. And, you know, so he's obviously a dark projection, which makes him interesting, but what makes him absolutely diabolically fascinating is the fact that you can... By watching his machinations and how he justifies and rationalizes what he does, I think, you know, you understand how that feels, because chances are you've just been doing something like that right up until the moment you turned on the TV to watch the show.
Right.
And then you get into, I think, the deepest and most satisfying aspect of the show, and these are the quiet, which I think often comes out most fully in the quiet episodes that you don't like, which is the psychological analysis and portraiture, and that's like the dreamscapes and the visions and the glimpses into, you know, deepest into the bedrock of this guy's personality and how it came to be and exactly how twisted and strange it is in there. And to me, what makes the show particularly transcendent is the fact that every time he does some totally whack thing, totally screw someone over and totally, you know, violate every ethical and moral, you know, position that we're all supposed to hold, and yet does it in this elegant way, at least to himself, that justifies it, you know, you can look in, you know exactly how that's radiating out of that completely screwed up inside core. And to, you know, and when they get in and they trace that and they reveal different little layers of it, I mean, to me, that's when the show is absolutely spellbinding.
I have no problem with sort of the psychological aspects of Tony, or did it, but I think we've just hit on something, which is that it is. I think it's Tony that I find really fascinating. I think sometimes when there are, as you put it, the sort of quiet episodes that involve a lot of other people, I think sometimes the energy gets spread a little thin, and it can just, the inertia can sort of flag a little bit. I think Janice, I feel like Janice has been sort of especially squandered this season. I feel like Janice Soprano has not, I feel like her character's really not been exploited as fully as it could have been. But I will say this, there was a great, talking about psychological layers, there was a great moment last night, the moment when Melfi told Tony that she just had enough of his Ranger games and was kicking, and she kicked him out. She said, we're done, basically. And he, that moment, though, when he said, he was standing at the doorway, and he said, I got to tell you, as a doctor, you cutting me out of therapy right now, I find extremely immoral.
Yeah.
And I mean, but you know, but there is this, like, this, and this is all about.
So that was after he told her that he noted that you don't need a gynecologist to know which way the wind blows.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
is a fabulous line.
Totally. The, but the, but he, Gandolfini, though, had this layer of on him where you could tell where, on the one hand, he was angry, but he did, you could see there was real pain there.
Mm-hmm.
That he really does depend, even though he disregards Melfi and uses her, I think, more as an escape from reality than anything, that he does really depend on her. And it is, he has, in a large way, sort of built his life around a couple of things, one of them being visits to the shrink. And you could tell how deeply it really did unsettle and hurt him that she was cutting him loose.
Yeah, seriously.
And it all played out on his face and just the little subtle shades and tones of voice that he was using.
Yeah, it's just an epic performance by Gandolfini. And if he doesn't win every award for acting this year, I mean, if only just to, excuse me?
That was Sarah sneezing. You're coughing. She's sneezing.
We're a whole upper respiratory funhouse here.
Seriously. So.
No. At any rate, no. Just. I mean, he's won some awards before, but this time around, he should take them all. Just, you know, as a way to say, hey, 7 years, and it was all pretty fabulous.
Hey, was there any explanation given last night as to why the Italians got the information wrong about Phil Leotardo and where he lived and whacked the wrong guy?
You know, I think they're idiots. I think that was the problem, and I think that what we were coming to understand is that Tony had really got himself a very low wattage crew. You know, I mean, I think often in family businesses, it's like second or third generation where things begin to, you know, those are the guys that bankrupt the organization.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I think that he, and also, I mean, the only guy that he's got, you know, the only captain that he's got near him now who's still there is Polly.
Right.
And he wanted to kill Polly a few weeks ago. You know, I mean, he was really flirting with the idea of whacking him out there on the fishing boat. You know, because he already took out Christopher, and Syl just got taken out last night. I mean, all but. Bobby's got whacked last night.
Well, and Bobby's dead, and that train sequence, by the way, was unnerving. I mean,
beautiful. Wasn't that just beautiful,
man,
shot?
And you knew it was coming. That's
totally.
The thing. They didn't, it wasn't like a, it's so cheap and easy to do the shock, like, gotcha, where the gunshot comes out of nowhere. They did it entirely the opposite way. They telegraphed it, and they told you, like, 45 seconds in advance. They're like, hey, guess what? In a minute or so, this guy's going to get killed.
Right. And it was just excruciating.
It was excruciating. I mean, my stomach was... I will tell you this, and this sounds like a cheesy, stupid, dumb suburban guy anecdote, but I was sitting there, and I was, just as Tony would, I was sitting there eating some ice cream last night while I was watching Sopranos.
What flavor?
It was like a cookies and cream thing.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sitting, it's like an Oreo cookie ice cream. So I'm sitting there, and I had kind of my fill, and I didn't want to finish it, but I'm sitting there, and...
Whoa, that is so not me, but go ahead.
Even with a TiVo... I was so gripped by The Sopranos last night that I didn't want to pause it long enough to take the 10 seconds to stick the ice cream in the freezer, and I swear to God, it was like melting into my shirt because I don't want to get off the sofa because I'm so into The Sopranos. But that sequence where Bobby gets it is just, it was unrelenting. It was so gripping and great. But you know, here's the other thing about last night is you really felt... And even now, I mean, and I know it's not real and it's fake and it's fictional and whatever, but you really do feel emotionally invested in this. And I couldn't help be torn last night by thinking how much how things might have gone differently for that crew if Christopher was still around. Nutcase that he was, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if I would have put my money on Christopher.
I don't know, but I mean, he's a guy who would have, you know, I mean, I get the feeling when push came to shove, he would have taken a bullet, you know? He would have gone down fighting. And he did. Tony didn't have him. Tony didn't. And Tony had no one really capable. It was just a bunch of hacks around him.
Well, Christopher might have been a little more. I mean, I don't know. He was not totally on board by the time he was. By the time he was ushered off the ship, as it were. But yeah, no. I mean, it was. But I was in bed last night, lying there, thinking, like, feeling kind of weird because it was just like, oh wow, you know. Silvio's gone. You know, I sort of love Silvio.
I thought he would be the one guy to make it all the way through the series. And maybe, you know, maybe he won't die. But I thought he would walk through unscathed. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I got a friend of mine that thinks it's going to be Paulie. He's convinced that Paulie will be the one guy that makes it through and just goes to work for Phil Ligotardo. And by the way...
Now, I'm telling you, I'm here to predict, even though I don't do a lot of prognostication.
Okay, now, this is, should we differentiate? This is not a spoiler. This is a prediction?
Yeah, totally. Okay, excellent. I haven't seen anything beyond what's already been ahead.
Clarifying for the people.
Yes, precisely. I believe Tony will be alive at the end, and I believe he'll be alive. I believe there's a good chance Phil Ligotardo will not be.
Uh-huh.
Phil is going to take a bunch of lead, I believe. But Tony will be left with his low wattage dimwits and everyone else scattered to the wind and that AR-15 that he's got. It'll be kind of hellish.
I got to say, two things. Early in the season, when they killed off Johnny Sack, I was really angry because I thought he's so great and he's such a wonderful character and this Phil Ligotardo guy didn't carry a... But you know what? I will just totally eat my words on that because Phil has turned out to be such an amazing... He's just so evil. I mean, he's just a bad, bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just an awful human being. And he makes a great villain, don't get me wrong, but he's a terrible person. He just has none of the nuance that Johnny Sack had, and certainly none of the nuance that Tony has, but he's just a weasel. I mean, he's just horrible. And a very convincing and terrifying villain, a legitimately terrifying man, and has been ever since that episode where he quite literally came out of a closet to kill Vito. Which remains one of the most terrifying things I've ever seen in that program. That sequence where he stepped out of the closet. I mean, it just rattled me. It disturbed me for like a day and a half. What else? The great sequence at the end with Tony and the guys in the house and that final moment, of course, with Tony in the dark, sitting in the room alone with a gun because he just feels like because they're coming for him.
Yep.
I mean, you know, you don't get... And then it just ended with that slow instrumental music. I mean, you don't get... better than last night. I mean, it was amazing. It was fantastic. And there was that great moment when he totally snapped and just gave it to AJ.
Totally,
Which I think was a lot of vicarious satisfaction for many people in the audience, myself included, by the way. And I know that you and I differ on that, but goddamn, that kid bugs me. So, I mean, I'm not saying everybody who's depressed just buck up and just shrug it off, but boy, he irritates me.
Well, it's never fun to watch, no matter, I mean, you know, a person obviously doesn't have control over their brain chemistry all the time, but that doesn't mean you have to enjoy it when they're, you know, whining away.
Right, and
it's just... Anyway, no disrespect to depressed people. I'm often one of them, but nevertheless.
The same friend of mine who thinks Paulie will make it through thinks that Janice will kill Tony.
I don't believe that to be true.
No, I mean, her whole thing is, well, she'll kill Tony because of what happened to Bobby and blah, blah, blah. I think Janice will save her own hide. I think she will hightail it out of town because Janice is always out for Janice. You know, that's what she does. Let's see, real well, Entourage. We can talk about Entourage. They're doing this weird thing, right, where the Entourage is, last night was the season finale, and then it's like 2 weeks off, and then they're starting the new season right away.
I think that's kind of weird, but yeah, that's what they're doing.
Which is great. Which is fantastic. And that show, as I say every week, just continues to maintain a very light, fizzy, enjoyable tone. Continues to be variations on a theme. It is pleasant, escapist entertainment, but boy, is it well done.
Mm-hmm.
And that character of Johnny Drama just continues to be... You'd think that all of them would be one-note characters, and I guess in a sense they sort of are. But, like, that he can imbue that Johnny Drama character with so many layers is a testament to the writing, the directing, and the acting of that guy, because they could all just be caricatures very easily.
Yep.
So...
Well, you know, Vince is really the only one-note character that there is, and Eric, to some degree.
Yeah.
But everyone that revolves around him, I mean, those three, Ari and... Turtle and Johnny are more and more fascinating.
You know, the weird byproduct of watching Entourage so much is that I now view Matt Dillon as being Kevin Dillon's brother. So I'm going to write him in, I'm going to write him a little fan letter and just let him know that.
Sweet.
So, all right. Is there anything good coming up this week, or is it all crap?
Well, this new David Milch show on HBO that's going to begin right after The Sopranos next Sunday.
Oh,
John from Cincinnati.
Right,
I've only watched the pilot, which I thought was pretty cool, but then some of my smart buddies who are also TV critics were telling me that it falls apart a little bit after that, but I got to watch it and find out.
All right, excellent. And then there's some other show coming up on HBO, isn't there? Some other, the hell am I thinking of? Maybe it's that that I'm thinking of.
Yeah,
I don't know what the hell. Must not have made that big of an impression. All right, excellent. Peter Carlin, read him in print in the Oregonian or online at OregonLive.com. Good luck with the bronchial system there.
Thanks.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Thank
you,
my friend. There you go. Peter Carlin, ladies and gentlemen. God bless him. All right. You know the great thing about Peter Carlin? Apart from everything.
Everything, of course.
It's the fact that I know he just infuriates people. It's not that I can go out of my way to antagonize the audience, but I know there's any number of people out there that as soon as I go, Peter Carlin, they just kind of go, and they just sort of clench. Just sort of like, what's his name? It's like, what's his name in the opening credits of Office Space, just clenching his steering wheel angrily. Son of a bitch! All right. Back after this with Tim Riley and your auditions to be Tim Riley for a day and a half. Don't go anywhere. We're moments away from Tim Riley, the Ministry of Truth. We've got this email. Rick, what? No S.H.I.E.L.D.? The bitch about you watching ahead is that you don't realize the season finale of The S.H.I.E.L.D. is on tomorrow. You have nothing to say about it. Here's the thing, and I do realize that I've been neglecting The S.H.I.E.L.D. recently, and it is, you know what, I weakened. I weakened and I watched it online, and it's not that it was bad, it's just that, like, watching it online, you do kind of lose track of when it is actually airing on television. So, no. I will be talking about it, but today's Monday, so I figure I'll do it all tomorrow, and then Wednesday after the finale's air, because I'm going to watch the finale again on television, and I'll sit it online. So, no, it is shaping up to be fantastic. So, we will have S.H.I.E.L.D. talk this week. Fear not. I'll probably do it with Peter Carlin. If not Wednesday, then maybe Monday. There's just no time. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, Tim Riley.
75,000 pounds of ground beef are being recalled due to E. coli. I see that smug little smile.
Yes, he's totally happy.
Not really my problem. A company based in California has recalled approximately 75,000 pounds of ground beef gobbled up in western states, including Oregon. The meat was shipped to stores in Oregon, a few other states, too.
It's the barely restrained glee that really sells.
A phone
it.
Call to the company has not been returned.
They're all dead.
This recall meat has labels such as EST-1201 or Established 1241. That's old meat. It's also marked on the package. It says, sell by May 6th, 07. Shouldn't you have eaten that by now if you purchased it on May 6th, if you're a carnivore?
I was just going to say, you dirty carnivore, you.
And the other one is April 20th, 07. Shouldn't that also have been eaten by now?
Yes.
So it's their own fault if they're hanging on to this meat so long that it can kill them. And the company is also offering a website with pictures of this meat, just
right.
In case you don't know what ground beef looks like.
You're not sure what rotten meat looks like, kids.
It says, photos of recalled beef products. And you call it 800 line.
Oh, by the way, speaking of calling a number, this is now the time to be calling if you'd like to audition to be Tim Riley for a day and a half. We'll do one more bank of these before we pick the winner. It's 503-733-2970. Please to be calling now for that, 503-733-2970.
So I found a big picture of ground beef.
That's... Why, that is ground beef.
It's ground beef rolled up in a roll, and it says ground beef on it.
Ugh.
73% lean, 27% fat.
You know, can I just tell you this, speaking of that, I was in my office this morning, and I walked in, and there was like a funk in my office, and I couldn't figure out what it was.
Somebody's eating ground beef in there.
Well,
sort of. Because, you know, I'll have lunch in my office sometimes. I'll just sit there and I'll just have lunch while I read, you know, whatever, while I read the news or something. And, you know, when I'm done with my lunch, if I have, like, sandwich wrappers or whatever, I'll just toss them in the trash can under the desk. And my first thought was, well, I wonder if the cleaning guy didn't come through, and I wonder if, my lunch discards from Friday are still sitting in my trash can. That would explain, account for the smell. Mm-hmm. Take it out. No, that's not it. You know what I found? I found some chili that was in a bowl that I'd brought a Tupperware thing of chili at one point, and I had finished some of it, not all of it, sealed it up, put it in a drawer, meant to take it home. A, forgot about it for like a month and a half, and B, turns out the lid wasn't sealed. So I found a big thing of like moldy beef chili in one of my desk drawers this morning. That's why my office smells bad. So if you walk into my office and you think it smells like one of these news stories, that's why.
Well, I'll make a note of it, not to attend your office functions for the next...
Yes, we should meet at a separate location.
Well, anyway, inmates at the Los Angeles County Jail didn't realize Paris Hilton had checked in until they saw it on television. You see, the socialite will not mix with the general population. She's in the special needs area. One inmate describes her jail as so filthy it's worse than Skid Row. Also, somebody said, it's hell. Go to hell and find out, said Alicia Silverton of Oakland. As she left the jail after serving 5 weeks for a crime she refused to describe. Singleton says she and the other inmates were asleep when Hilton checked in. When they saw it on the news the next morning, most of them said, oh, Paris, Paris, Paris. If you do the crime, you've got to do the time. That's jail talk, apparently.
It's a little jail wisdom right there.
Yeah. Well, let's think about obese children, shall we? With summer coming up, there is more of a focus on them. They're everywhere. With school starting to close out for the summer, a Cleveland Clinic study finds that children are getting fat.
Damn it. It's completely... There we go.
Laura Jeffers of the Cleveland Clinic talks about fat children.
Schools have worked so hard at getting kids into shape, learning, you know, more about foods, healthy lifestyles, and then they go home. And for 3 months, they are not in any programs, any guidance, and I'm not surprised that they are gaining the weight back and losing their cardiovascular fitness.
They have terrible uneducated parents who continue to have children.
We were getting up, having breakfast before school. Let's get up and have breakfast in the summer. And then let's do something. You know, get yourself out of the kitchen, out of the house. You know, maybe a couple snacks here and there. But they should be scheduled.
For breakfast,
definitely. And a lunch should be portioned. We shouldn't just be eating all day just because we have access to the kitchen.
Why not try some ground beef?
Let's have a big bowl of cake frosting.
Let's get them all high on sugar and yell at them because they won't sit down. Well, Hollywood mom Dina Loewen may have finally landed her own television program. According to Page Six, in spite of her oldest daughter Lindsay's admittance to rehab last week, who nobody's talking about anymore, Dina is in talks with E! To start a reality series called Momager. Or Momager?
Well, whatever. Momager. Oh, like manager.
M-O-M-A-G-E-R.
Oh, I see. Who is she managing exactly?
I don't know. The show will feature Dino Dinah trying to turn her youngest child, 14-year-old Ellie, and 11-year-old Cody, into stars like her big sister.
Oh, God. Somebody should go kidnap those children and put them in therapy right now.
She's such a terrible woman.
Seriously. Somebody needs to go take those children and deprogram them and give them to better parents. God, I'm sorry that you didn't get... I'm sorry that you aren't famous, okay? I'm sorry that nobody found you adorable as a teenager. Get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. All right. Let's do one more here.
Well, what would a day be without Rosie O'Donnell news? She's been out of the view lately, hasn't she?
Yes.
It's because the controversial Yakmaster's memoirs are coming to the nation's bookstores this fall.
Yakmaster sounds like some sort of Ipecac-based product.
I just made that term up.
Yakmaster. Have you eaten something that disagrees with you? Need to empty your stomach right away?
We'll have to have Bob Brooks voice that one.
Try a heaping helping of Yakmaster.
The book is already titled Celebrity Detox. It'll offer readers an inside look at Rosie's life and experience in the public eye. O'Donnell doesn't intend to be vindictive, but the book will touch on the events of the past 8 months that led to her early exit from the ABC television program. She'll also address the ongoing feud with Donald Trump that has gained national attention over the past few months.
Yakmaster. That was really the peak there. I mean, the rest of the story is okay. No. It was your lead into it. It was genius.
Well, let's see if somebody else tried to beat such things.
Well, let's see, shall we? All right, it's 503. 503, that you've set the bar high, Tim Riley. 503-733-2970. 503.
Yakmaster.
Yak mistress. 503-733-2970. We'll go through like, one bag or something here, and we will give you your chance to win a spot at Body Worlds 3, OMSI Body Worlds 3 Wednesday, the special press VIP tour this Wednesday. And, depending on your acumen, you may or may not get to come in and do some stories on Friday when Tim Riley's actually gone. So the number's 503-733-2970. Then please to be preparing and reading a 30-second news story for us in your own style. This is not a like impersonating Tim Riley. This is do it as yourself here.
We wouldn't allow that.
No, of course not. That would be beneath us. It's 503-733-2970. This will be your last chance to do that. We'll start with hi, Rick Emerson Show. Who's this?
This is John.
Hey, John, what's up?
Hey, I've got a story for you.
All right. Hold on. Let me write this down. John. All right, okay.
All right, we're ready.
And are you free Wednesday morning, should you be selected, sir?
I can be free.
Fantastic. All right, begin. Try to keep it around 30 seconds. Begin at your leisure, sir.
Before the medical malpractice trial of a Jefferson County doctor began on Monday, April 16th, prospective jurors were warned the content of the trial, complications following an episiotomy, may turn even the strongest of stomachs.
Oh, wait. Now, hold on. Are you going to be reading the story that we decided was the worst story in the history of the world?
Well, what better story to read?
I like your spunk, my friend. Now, I do believe...
No, I don't want to hear it again.
Is this the story about the back door contents coming out the front door?
Yeah.
Yeah, here's the thing about that. Listen,
you didn't even let me get past the first paragraph.
No, hell no. No, we know.
We know where you're going.
Tim has taken off his headphones. Tim didn't want to hear anymore. No. We know all about this story. We have quite a file on this particular story that you selected. Now, let me ask you this. Did you pick this story without knowing its particular infamous history on this program, or did you pick the story because of its infamous history on the
most
show?
Most definitely because of.
All right. Well, while I do appreciate your moxie, sir, while I appreciate your up and at 'em, your get up and go, let's not read that. Do you have a backup story?
No, man. I was going for that one there.
Where are you at? Where are you physically located? Right now.
I'm out in Northeast Portland.
I mean, what I'm saying is, like, are you at your house? Are you?
Oh, I'm at work.
You're at work? Do you have a newspaper, some other reading material handy?
Or the internet.
I'd hate to disallow it just simply based on the story content.
Oh, man. Yes, I do. Put me on hold and I'll come up with something.
All right, I'll tell you what. We'll take this other call. We'll come back to you in just a second. All right. Let's just we'll take a little side observation here before we do anything else. Hi there. How can I help you today? Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This is Ellen from Candy.
Hi, Ellen. You're on the air. What's up?
Hi. I love your show.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to let you know if you can stomach it, you should watch the Oprah show today.
And why would I want to do? Why would I want to inflict myself?
Well, I saw a preview for it this morning, and Gina Davis and her big head and teeth are going to be on.
That is awesome. Really? What time is Oprah on?
Yeah. What time is Oprah on? 4, I think.
4
I think it's
o'clock.
On at 4, so maybe it was fate that your shrink appointment canceled.
Maybe. If anybody hasn't seen Gina Davis, oh, man, I hope that she looks... I sound like Morgan Freeman, the show secretary. I hope I can make it across the border. I hope that she looks exactly the same as she did in that PSA for the Will Rogers Institute, because it was terrifying. She looked like some sort of raptor that was going to lean out of the screen and take off part of your face.
Yeah, we were laughing so hard when you were talking about that, and I haven't seen her, so I don't...
Oh, it's terrible. It's so bad. She is terrifying. She's got the largest teeth. It's amazing she can close her mouth to sleep. All right.
Well, my coworker who works with me is really serious. He never laughs. He was dying when you were talking about her.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Excellent. Thank you for the heads up, Ellen.
Thank you. Love your show.
Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. Okay, there you go. Well, we'll go back and see if what's-his-name John is prepared. John, are you prepared, sir?
On a whim here, I've got...
All right. Well, you know what? We're just... It's not the story itself. It's just the style in which you're reading. Okay. We'll do this, and then we're up against it, so we'll kind of make this the last entry. So, go ahead, sir.
Britt Hume called former Senator John Glenn a partisan spear chucker to describe his role in a Fred Thompson investigation back in his old Senate days on Fox News Sunday. Via Wikipedia, Glenn also served as the ranking minority member on a special Senate investigation committee chaired by Tennessee Senator and actor Fred Thompson that looked into allegations China attempted to influence U.S. politicians prior to the 96 elections.
Is that the extent of the story, sir?
Yeah, pretty much, because then it goes into starting with that quote, but...
Where is that from?
Well, let's see. Crooksandliars.com.
Did he... He really used that phrase? I don't think you can say that phrase anymore.
June 3rd, 2007. That's the dateline on this bad.
Really?
Wow.
I'm not saying you can't say it. I mean, you're a newsman.
I can give you the quote. It says, Fred Thompson was the chairman of the investigating committee, and it went absolutely nowhere. He was effectively buffaloed in that investigation by none other than John Glenn, who was a wonderful man, but somebody normally you would think capable of being a real partisan, a spear shucker who could undo an investigation. Jesus. So it didn't go very well, and I think Fred Thompson has acknowledged since then that it wasn't his finest hour.
That's funny that, I mean, it's funny that they're using that against John Glenn, who was the whitest of white men, because I was always to understand that that was a bit of a racial slur, but...
Yeah, I'm thinking that Fred Thompson was not really on his game that day.
No, or maybe John Glenn just looks different since I've last seen him. All right, John, thank you for trying out. We've got your information. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. We'll take a break. Back after the comeback and wrap it up after this. We got Likas at 3, Don and Mike at 7. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Don't go anywhere. We now enter the saddest part of the broadcasting day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson show. Well, it's that time, ladies and gentlemen. Wait, hold on. Why, it's that time, ladies and gentlemen. No, damn it. No. It's not that time. It's never that time again. I'm going to delete that so I can never play it again. It's that time, ladies and gentlemen. The so weakest drum roll ever. It is that time to announce the person who will be Tim Riley for a day and a half, at least half, quite possibly a day and a half. This person will get to accompany us to the OMSI Body Worlds 3 special VIP press tour coming up Wednesday at 8 a.m. And then depending how things go in the lay of the land and so forth, they may or may not be in on Friday during the noon news hour to play the part of Tim Riley for at least a segment of that program. And ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the winner is... Scotty's typing on the screen, by the way. Everybody did a super great job. It's tough to pick. No, it's true. You're all winners. Not really. So everybody did a great job. It really was hard to pick, but I think, odd as it may sound, we are actually going to be going with John, the most recent, actually, the guy that just competed a few minutes ago, actually. I asked Sarah, I'm like, do you think it's weird because he was the last guy to compete?
No, I agree with you.
It has nothing to do with him being the last guy to compete, and everybody was really great, but I believe it is a unanimous decision. We're going to be going with John, who was the final contestant you heard a few minutes ago. He will be going to see Body World 3 Wednesday, and then he'll call in Wednesday in the new news hour and give his take on it, and he may or may not be joining us on Friday. We'll see how that works out. So congratulations to him, and thanks to everybody who tried out. Don't forget, go to 970.am and sign up to become an AM 970 glorious bastard. We're going to be giving away a pair of tickets to see OMSI Body Worlds 3 every week for, I think, the next, it's either 4 or 5 weeks. So the only way you can do that is to go to 970.am right now and sign up to be an AM 970 glorious bastard. How long do I have here?
About 5 seconds till the music starts.
Oh. And there you go. So we want to thank CNN radio correspondents Amanda Moyer, Dick Giuliano, and Lisa Goddard for joining us all today. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guests will be, among others, the very fine Dennis Pitzenbarger here on the Rick Emerson Show, along with the very fine Lisa Goddard, the very fine Jim Roop, and blah, 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 blah. I had a whole thing I was going to do there, but I forgot what it is. What's that?
Good job.
Yeah.
Way to choke at the end.
I'm a professional. Thank you. Rick Emerson Show, produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio in the newsroom. Tim Riley, the PA, Scotty J, and the gatekeepers, Dave Zinn. As always, my friends, don't let the bastards grind you down, and do try to help the retarded. A task at which I failed spectacularly today. So thanks so much for that. See you all tomorrow. Like us next. Don and Mike at 7. Bye now.
I'm actually sick. I've been having explosive diarrhea.